that's the different.
Oh, yeah, the one, that's right, yes, that's why there's.
He said let him know when we're recording. Oh.
We are recording? Good evening, everybody. Thank you for your patience. I ask that we all rise for the pledge to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody. Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Francis Smith.
Present.
Ms. Quiatek.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Before we get started tonight with our typical city business, we do have a couple citations. First, we have two honoring recent city retirees. The first is Police Captain Michael Leeser. I don't believe Captain is here. And we also have another citation honoring Assistant Chief Anthony Prelitz for the Fire Department. I also don't believe he's here. So then we'll move on and we'll make sure that both those retirees get their citations in the mail. We also have a citation honoring our Lehigh Little League 9 and 10 All-Stars. Some people in the room better know them as the USA East Regional Champions. So I will ask if somebody from the team wants to come up to the lectern. A coach or a parent or a player. Come on up, buddy. Go ahead.
Yay!
So, let's know you're representing the team tonight. You can go right over to the microphone. And then, I'm just gonna acknowledge everybody before I read the citation from the city. I do just want to acknowledge the entire team because those who are unaware, in Little League Baseball, we're fortunate here in the Commonwealth, Williamsport hosts the Little League World Series, but the Little League World Series in Williamsport is only for a certain age group of All-Stars. For 9 and 10, the team to my left over here, they went as far as that age group can go, and they won the USA East Regional Championship, which is the furthest you could go at that level, and I believe it was a 13 state?
12
more than 11 state championship. So I do want to take a quick second before I recognize the team with the citation from council to just acknowledge each player, starting with Colin Kelly, John Fireman, Taylor Yoder, Jack Nishko, Harrison Sir, RJ Rivera Jr., Marcus Stewart, Noah Domitrovitz, Hunter Roth, Pierce Steiner, Ashley Bendy, and Levi Chaco. And then, of course, there are the parents that helped out, Kevin Kelly, PJ Yoder, Mario Stewart, and Tom Sir. So I have a citation here, and there will be a copy for everyone with the team. Whereas Lehigh Little League 9-10 All-Stars from the city of Bethlehem and its vicinity has won the highest title for its age group in Little League Baseball. And whereas these young student athletes had to win district, section, state, and mid-Atlantic titles in the process. And whereas this dedicated team fought hard to bring a USA East Regional Championship to the citizens of Bethlehem. Now therefore, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Lehigh Little League 9-10 All-Stars be extended the gratitude of a city that has the distinction of having the 2025 Little League USA East Regional Championship team. And be it further resolved that the entire All-Star team, the head coach, all coaches, and everyone involved are congratulated on winning the USA East Regional Championship in Cranston, Rhode Island on Saturday, August 9th, 2025. And that's signed by all members of council. Thank you.
So to the player at the microphone, where are you going?
Do you mind stating your name for the record?
Me?
Yeah.
Ashton Kennedy.
Ashton, and what do you want to say on behalf of your team tonight, Ashton?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Here, I have this for your team. Please share with all your teammates, okay?
Good job, Ash.
Thank you for coming out tonight, team. Thank you to all the parents for coming out on a school night. And we really just appreciate and congratulations to every player, every parent, every coach. And I know that's a lot of nights away from home and on the road during the process. So congratulations. Thank you for coming out tonight. We are going to move on with our agenda tonight, so if you guys want to talk, I just ask that you do it out in the hallway as we continue on. Coach Kevin and everybody, wish you all the best, and have a good academic year too, everybody.
Thank you. Great job. Thanks for having us.
So what I'm hearing is in 8 years, Liberty's going to be competing for another state title.
Yeah.
Let's hope.
All right, thanks, Mike.
See you, Mr. Kelly. Moving on to the approval of minutes for our September 2nd, 2025 meeting. Any comments on the minutes from September 2nd? Minutes stand approved. Moving on to public comment. So as is custom, our first public comment is for any subject not being voted on this evening. We do have a 5-minute time limit for each speaker. For anyone following along at home on YouTube, if you want to watch in real time, you can scroll ahead to the live portion of the meeting. We have 5 speakers signed up. I'll start with our first speaker, Peg Church.
Good evening. Peg Church, 4th Regional Brighton Street, Bethlehem, zip 18015. And Council, I thank you for your time tonight. I'm here to support Mark Riddle and his concerns and some concerns we have in Bethlehem about the situation. And as we know, winter is coming. So there is a time frame here for plans to be made. I want to mention that my husband and I do some volunteer work at the emergency shelter, and I don't do this for accolades for anyone, but I've been incredibly heartened by the way they're so grateful to the people that come there for anything that is done for them. And I didn't quite expect that when I first came to do some volunteer work. I'm from Arlington, Virginia. I've lived here since 1970 in the Lehigh Valley, and I'm near the Hill to Hill Bridge, and I'm very familiar with Norfolk Southern because they are a constant in my life. Right outside there, they do have a right to keep everyone safe in their business, but I think the city has to stand up and do, I guess you're working on it now, and that's good. One of the thoughts that I heard about was that in Harrisburg, there's perhaps a very good model, I think it's fresh off the ground, where they have tents and so forth, and plans where people are kept safe, and it seems like there's reasonable safety and health matters that can be handled there. And I'm just wondering if perhaps that is a, hoping that's seriously being considered by the city. And, you know, over time, more complicated setups may be involved. But also, as I mentioned, coming from Arlington, and since we had this crowd tonight, I want to mention that I was on the Conklin Flora's championship team 2 years in a row, county champions. So, yeah. Arlington was also noticed because the public schools were the first public schools to have physical education for elementary school students. And the reason I mention that is I come to this area. Elementary school kids got the physical education, but then they seem, the city seems to have this fabulous golf course. And I thought, oh, okay, we've got this nice frill here. And then the Steel Club and these other places have all golf galore. Then there's a driving range over on Ellicks Mill. Nice, quiet, reserved area near all kinds of facilities. Maybe a good tenting ground, such as Harrisburg has. Won't interfere, people won't be tripping over people on the sidewalk that are homeless, and it will be relatively safe, relatively possible to monitor what is going on while giving people some privacy, both on the site and maybe people that don't want to be too close to such a situation, but still have some accessibility to and proper monitoring. So I throw that out as an idea, but I think that you know, there's kind of a timeline here, and please consider that. And I'm not sure if you have time to have any reactions, using up some of my 46 seconds left on that. I also see that Norfolk Southern has come out, reached out, and they told you what they would like, and they certainly are within their rights to have the same, their grounds safe. But I also mentioned that I've been here a few times, a few years ago, saying, please, 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 have set up a meeting with Norfolk Southern so that maybe we can have a quiet zone, but and the city would have to request it from Norfolk. That was never a priority, never got any responses on that, but maybe this is a chance since Norfolk Southern is coming to you. Maybe you could kill two birds with one stone.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Chair. Our next speaker signed up is Sean Kernan.
Hello, City Council. My name is Sean Kernan. I live at 414 West Market Street in West Bethlehem. I've been a resident of Bethlehem for the last 10 years, actually 10 years in November. Proudly a resident of Bethlehem and originally from Ohio. I just wanted to state that I'm an active member of the community. I am an instructor at the Fab Lab at Northampton Community College. I volunteer on the Southside Arts District Design Committee, and I'm a business owner. I have an engineering consulting company, and I'm also trying to launch a toy company for kids' toys, and a local artist. That's just to give some context. When I go from my home in West Bethlehem to the Fab Lab, where I spend a lot of time making things, teaching classes, and engaging with community, I go past a bus stop that is at the corner, sort of on the on-ramp of 2nd and New. It wasn't always a bus stop, and then it became a bus stop at some point in the time, in the last, I don't know, 5 years or so. But every time I drive past there, there are people sitting on the curb or the guardrail, and there's no place to sit. Sometimes I drive past, sometimes I walk past, sometimes I bike ride past, and almost all the time there are people waiting on the bus, either heading I think it's for the EBS bus line, either heading east or west. I know it's a dangerous intersection at large, and perhaps there have been conversations about this intersection in conversation. But I believe that in this particular area, there should be a place for people to sit down. And for all bus stops, there should be a place for people to sit down, especially when it's being used by so many people. Or so it seems to me. I haven't looked at every bus stop in town. I don't know what the standard is, but in the places that I've been and lived in other places, bus stops have benches. And in fact, today, you know, there were probably 7 or 8 people, one of whom was a pregnant mother waiting on the bus with no place to sit, being forced to stand. I think Atlanta or the city should seriously consider finding some kind of solution for that bus stop and maybe others. I know that there are some very serious and complicated issues facing the city right now. And this is maybe a small thing, but there's probably going to be a larger conversation later on in this meeting. And I'm not convinced this bus stop and this bench problem isn't related to the bigger topic that's going to be discussed today. So in the midst of all of these very complicated issues facing the city, I encourage all of you, and I appreciate all of the work that all of you are doing and serving the public and doing your duty as Americans and as Bethlehem residents. And I implore you to exercise courage and compassion as you continue to fulfill your obligations as city council people and people that work for the city of Bethlehem, a place that I call home, and I am very proud to call home. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and you'll probably be hearing from me again at some point. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next speaker tonight, Mr. Spagnuolo.
Anthony Spagnuolo, my own Soto Sani, 10 West 4th Street, Bethlehem, PA, also Adagio, 530 Pembroke Road. My concern in tonight is there's $150,000 that is dedicated to the downtown businesses. I just want to make sure it's not, we've been waiting 3 years, I just want to make sure it's not reallocated to anything else other than the downtown businesses. And just for a point of reference, there's a business privilege tax when you open up a business. And in Bethlehem, there are approximately 5,000 business privilege licenses. So on that, the average fee is $1,000. So not fee, but like what you take in a year, your gross, your net, and we just average them all out, that would be like $5 million. So I think that the businesses have earned that right to, you know, keep that money within themselves. I understand all of us as business owners, we must create an environment that's conducive for welcoming people who come in and partake in our livelihood, and we will, you know, reciprocate. We give duly amounts back, just like for this, the baseball team. I mean, I will toot my own horn. I sponsored them, so it's probably why they won. No, but yes, we sponsor, we're local. And just keep the money, you know, within house. And that's just my point. And I always thank Miss Collins, Laura Collins, and to keep me abreast. And I understand, like, we're on 10 West 4th Street is Fred P. Rooney. He's my landlord. And, you know, we're always in conjunction with the city and just, you know, want always what's best for everyone. I'm a Moravian graduate, so I get it. They're the second university school that's in the United Nations Environmental Science, and that's great. I don't think, you know, you don't need a PhD or, you know, get someone who has marketing skills. Like, if I saw President Grigsby was here, definitely they have enough money and funds, not as much as Lehigh. But just to put it in perspective, $1 million, right, in seconds is 11 days. So if you have $180 million in your endowment, and again, I donate to Moravian. Unfortunately, the football team lost 50-0. But, you know, you keep your chin up, you keep striving forward. And again, right, just, you know, and an injustice for one is an injustice for all, like little Martin Luther King. So let's just, you know, stay focused, keep the money within the business and in the businesses, and we need it. You know, we're down, I would say collectively, about 20%. With the parking, as well as all the other in the city, the UGI, and it's great. You're reinvesting in the city. You shine the star. You make a new route. Unbelievable. But please, let's just keep it, that money, keep it allocated for the downtown businesses. And just so everyone knows here, it's been there for 3 years. So, and I duly think we've earned it. And I appreciate everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spagnuolo. For our next speaker, Artie Kurtola.
Hi, my name's... Is this thing on?
It's working, Mr.
Okay. My name is Artie Kurtola, 13 Lawfer Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Been a resident for quite a number of years. You can take what I have to say, build on it, or throw it away. But let me say for the record, in view of a young man's life cut short at the age of 31 for exercising his Fourth Amendment rights of freedom of speech, there's no words for it. Whatever your beliefs in our United States of America, we're supposed to be for equality, no matter of race, color, or creed. There's no reason to kill any living being, human or four-legged being, unless the creature is attempting to kill you or another. All people should pass through metal detectors at all gatherings. The only ones permitted to carry weapons of any kind should be well-known and respected men or women of law enforcement or of the community. This also needs to be the law in the sacred city of Palestine and the Gaza Strip. As I suggested when I was interviewed by Nanu Tong, Sandy Wong at a United Nations event in New York City around 2 years ago, I stated that the United Nations needs to place that law into control. All metal detectors in every gathering. They need to take control and see that it's enforced in the sacred city of Palestine and the Gaza Strip, as well as for the United States, for which we stand.
Thank you, Mr. Kurtola. That exhausts our list of who has signed up in advance, so I'll go around the room. Again, we're on anything not being voted on this evening, so I don't care if you comment on anything not on the agenda. I'll start to the left. Is there anyone who wants to make comment on anything not being voted on tonight? Turn to the Wide Center. Is there anyone who wants to make comment? I'll start with Mr. Shire.
Bill Shire, 1890 Eaton Avenue. Since everybody's saying tonight how long they lived in Bethlehem, so I'll say I lived the first 18 years of my life here and the last 22 years. So that's a total of 40 years. I want to talk a little bit more tonight about economics, part two. I'll start again with tariffs, but a slightly different angle. The question is, who pays for the tariffs? Now, there's a case where just an article in the Wall Street Journal, Whirlpool is complaining that some of their parts that they import, the exporters are eating the cost of the tariff by reducing the price of their gadgets. But generally speaking, they pass it on. And it goes to wholesalers and retailers and finally to the consumer. And at each step of the way, maybe they eat a little bit of it, but generally it gets passed on. And some things don't go right away to consumers. They're what becomes called intermediate goods because they go to, say, a factory that uses that to make something that goes to the computers. But again, most of it gets passed on. So that's us, the consumers. And the money goes into the U.S. Treasury. And it's now over $1 billion a month. And so it's not insignificant, and it's increasing. So what is this money used for? Well, it's to defray part of the cost of the tax cuts. Also, as you know, the budget has been hammered here, there, and everywhere. The Weather Bureau doesn't need so many people anymore. FEMA doesn't need as much money. It goes on and on and on and on. Almost everywhere you look in the federal government now, cut, 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 cut. Oh, we got to pay for the tax cuts. Well, it's only a small part of the tax cuts. The deficit in the current year is going to be $1 trillion. A group called Oxfam America, which seems to be a reputable group, in fact, they have a report out which you can get online about this and inequality and related questions, has stated that since 2001, the tax cuts for the wealthy, 1%, have amounted to, over the 25 years, to $10 trillion. Current national debt is $37 trillion. So tax cuts for the 1% account for 27% of the current national debt. This is why Jimmy Carter years ago said, we're living in an oligarchy, especially since Citizens United, where the wealthy people are in control, and they are right now, without a doubt. And I am reminded of the Roman Empire, which is one of my historical interests. I'll perhaps speak more about that at the next meeting, but very briefly, it was a republic with sort of an electoral college on steroids, save that for the future, until Julius Caesar, and then they had emperors. And gradually, more and more inequality. And it was harder and harder to recruit people into the army as a result. So they paid the barbarians to guard the borders. This is something that's not widely known. And the barbarians, after a while, said, well, we can settle for what they're giving us. Why don't we just take it all? So that's what they did. Thank you. And parallels are interesting to me between the Roman Empire and the United States of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Was there anyone else in the White Center who would like to make comment? Ms. Noonan?
Hello, Valerie Noonan. I actually did a lot of preparation for this meeting, but I don't have everything I wanted to say written out because there's frankly too much information. I'm here to comment again regarding the eviction of the encampments along the canal. So I've done a lot of reviewing past council meetings, research, looking at the strategic plan to end homelessness, and a few hours ago I had a conversation on the phone with Ms. Satullo. So what, one thing that stuck out to me is that it's really not clear what is actually happening with what parcels are being evicted and who is evicting people. Because this was originally a matter of Norfolk Southern. But we had an organizer go down on September 10th, the day the signs were to be posted, and he looked around, he talked to people, and the information that he found was a little bit different. He found that there were signs going up from UDI and from PennDOT as well. But also he talked to a police captain who said they were putting signs on everything and that it was going to be the whole canal being swept, including city parcels. Now, that is interesting because in the conversation I had with Ms. Satullo today, she said that city parcels are not included. So we have someone in the Bethlehem Police Department who is giving me different information that I'm getting from a city employee. So I don't see Chief Pat here today. I don't know if there's someone from the police department here. But there, this was, where is she? Oh, hi, Chief. So I don't know if you heard what I just said, but there was a Captain Audelo. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. It was A-U-D-E-L-O, who was down there on the 10th and said to our fellow organizer, yeah, we're clearing everything, including city parcels. But Ms. Satullo from the city said city parcels are not included. It's just UGI, PennDOT, and Norfolk Southern. So I'd really like to clear that up. Really, like, I had the conversation where I did learn that UGI and PennDOT only threw their hat into the ring on the 9th, so I guess nobody had notice about that. But, man, like, the whole situation, it's really quite complicated. And I just find it frustrating that the city seems to really want to pass the buck on this, in the sense that there are a lot of city workers who are doing great work, and they've done great work for years, and they are continuing to try and make solutions for problems that they didn't cause, right? So I'm not talking about, like, community and economic development or anything. But, like, there's this kind of attitude of, because we're not personally posting the signs, that we're not a part of this eviction, and it's just not true. I know that I was told specifically that apparently Norfolk Southern Police went and posted the signs for themselves, but they were accompanied by Bethlehem Police. And I have to wonder, like, aren't they police? Do they need someone protecting them? They're police, right? Again, there's too much for me to say in 5 minutes here. But I'd really like us to continue working on solutions, particularly for people who are planning to continue camping for whatever reason that is, because we know they're not going to the shelters. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noonan. Was there anybody else in the wide center who wants to make comment?
I'll start in the front row, sir in the gray.
And then Mr. Faber.
Sorry. Hey, everybody. Thanks for having us. Thanks for doing what you do. My name is Sam DeSoto. I am a resident of Bethlehem for 10 years. 814 High Street, 108-1808. But I own a business in the 18015. corner of Taylor and Mechanic. I've discovered that my tactics over the last few years, forgive me, I haven't been here in about 10 years. I used to come far more often. For creating awareness were not necessarily the best way to do it. I wasn't planning on speaking tonight, but I would like to propose either more police presence or a traffic camera eventually on the corner there at Taylor Mechanic. I have gone through channels including Southside Arts District, speaking before City Council, you know, years ago, and in hopes that there would be more safety, public safety awareness on the one-way streets specifically. I'm an active runner. I run every day. I'm an active bike cyclist. I cycle nearly every day, all four seasons, and I can tell you that I've encountered some very dangerous situations. I've noticed other people encounter these situations. And if the answer is to look at the accident report or to review some police reports, as we all know, the police are not always called. I myself have been in traffic incidents that the police were not called, whether I was in a vehicle or hit on a bicycle. And that's just the fact. So I feel that when it's too late, it's too late. I would like to bring this to your awareness. I feel like the corner of Taylor and Mechanic is a great corner to monitor. You know, again, it were from cameras or from police car, you know, bus squad, police presence. I feel like the police of the city do a great job, and we've always played nice. And I know that in the beginning of my businesses, the business is called Bond Place Brewing, 310 Taylor Street. In the beginning, I did see a lot more activity over there, and I do feel like those one-way streets and those stop signs were respected, at least from what I could see. I'm in that building more than I'm anywhere else, so I do see a lot more than most people would see, and I just want to bring that to your attention and have it formally on the record. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Mr. Faber.
Hello, Harry Faber. Since everybody else was being personal, telling their personal history, I figured I'd join in. My father worked at the Bethlehem Steel for the majority of his life until it closed. My mom's side of the family all pretty much worked at Just Born, and they're all my parents are in their 70s, my dad's 75, my mom is 71. So Bethlehem, as I've said, my whole history here is my home. I went to Moravian. I also used to attend Advent Moravian Church, and my whole childhood, every winter I would feed the homeless at Advent. And so when it comes to issues of homeless or unhoused people, it hits home. I actually left the church because I actually heard the story recently at a family dinner. My mom had to tell my partner Katie that I've always got really close with the homeless people. I'm very personable. I talk a lot. And the one year it was the last meeting or the last time we were feeding the homeless. And I told one of the people I would talk with the whole winter that I hope to see you next year. Not something you say to a person that doesn't really have a home. And I stopped going because then Advent redid the whole area where we would do the feeding, and they would stay there overnight. And then all of a sudden it was too nice for them, and we were like, oh, we can't really bring these people in here. You know, the smell or the dirtiness, there was a very classist justification as to why we no longer can feed the homeless. And then after that I kind of stopped going to church. And that is all to say that when it comes to this in particular, the city of Bethlehem has maintained the position that we don't enforce sweeps. And winter is coming, as the first speaker said. And so for an enforcing of a sweep in a time like this, with nowhere to go, is truly uncaring, to say the least. And with what, to address kind of what Artie said in the terms of political violence, I would argue that in and of itself is also a form of political violence. I would say that all this systemic injustice and inequality, to address what my comrade behind me had talked about earlier, is also political violence. I mean, in a system, in a society where we have such abundance that we would rather throw away and waste rather than give to those who are in need, or to even create a system in which such tragedies and such suffering is occurring. I mean, it's just wild. It's really wild to me. And I think that even if Norfolk Southern claims we need these people removed, or if it's the city's position or whoever's claiming that they need it, I mean, it's still up to the city in a sense to enforce it. And so what's going to happen? You're going to have police come down and say, you guys need to move. If they don't move, what, you're going to charge them with trespassing, and now you're going to put people in an even worse condition in a place of, whether it's Northampton County or they go upstate. Now they're in a private prison, being forced to be slave labor, all because they were poor, impoverished, they didn't have a house. And when you really look at that whole, from that bigger lens, it's so clear that the ruling class, whether it's the political pundits or the people in this room who have power, or the extreme ultra-wealthy who just benefit off of this insanely corrupt and crooked system, aren't doing enough and are enabling, perpetuating, profiting off of this violence. It's hard to put to words. And I just really, hope that y'all will listen to people like Valerie, who have really done their homework and put their hearts and their minds into researching and gathering people that come here and talk out about this, especially when it's so easy to just walk on by, because I gather to say no one up front has ever been homeless. If I wasn't for my 70-year-old parents, I'd probably be homeless. I can't afford to live. So I really hope that you guys can find it in your hearts to do something and not enforce this sweep, because it's truly disgusting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Was there anyone else in the Wide Center who would make comment? Mr. Gallup?
Stephen and Town, Sanderson Ridge. I came tonight not planning to say anything, but I've been provoked. Last meeting, I stated that housing problem in Bethlehem was created by the city through the needs of Lehigh University and Bethlehem Steel, which decimated the South Side. But tonight, discrimination is also a gift of the city from its origins. The city of Bethlehem should not exist as such. It was the most unholy marriage possible of two boroughs. Most unholy. The area and the Lehigh River became the social iron curtain for North Bethlehem. At one point, did not allow anyone who didn't belong to the church own property. That's a height of discrimination. You can't live here with me. And then the South Side, which was barren land, became inhabited because the industry needed workers, and there was an influx of uneducated Europeans. And that created, again, an intellectual iron curtain between the two sides. The north side being educated and fluent in English, who later call themselves Native Americans, in the South Side, groups of inhabitants who can speak to one another because of their language problems. And that was exhibited by the number of churches on the South Side, four churches within one block of each other, all of the same religion, but different ethnicity. So there's no cohesion on the South Side. And people on the South Side felt uneasy crossing that river. It was made very clear to them they were unwelcome. So that's the origins of the city. Philadelphia calls it Salt, the City of Brotherly Love. Ever Bethlehem to try and use that is almost criminal. So a lot of people aren't aware of this, but many of the ills that exist today were created in and by the city. So the people who spoke behind me asking for assistance should be given every ounce of possibility for that assistance. For one simple reason, to make up for the sins of the past. And if they were to confess those sins, they'd probably spend 1 year in a confession box. And spend a year reciting a Hail Mary to get remission. So, just think about that.
Thank you, Mr. Antal. Was there anyone else in the wide center who wants to make comment? Turn to the right. Is there anyone to the right who wants to make comment this evening? Yes.
You're welcome to use either that bike there or this one here.
Oh, I
watched
a
city.
Welcome to me.
It's always listening.
Yeah, unfortunately, so just listen. Notes here. I was not planning on speaking today. My name is Lucas. But I would like to say a few words. My life is intrinsically connected to Bethlehem. My grandfather also still retains a pension from working most of his life at the steel. My grandfather and two brothers were born in Fountain Hill. I'm a graduate with a degree from Northampton Community College. I do believe that systems are what is creating and sustaining the problem that we have discussed mostly this evening. I do believe that this council, as well as the Council of Easton and Allentown, are in charge of systems and have the ability to make change. I would be more willing to blame the individual and their lack of bootstrap pulling if we lived in a society that had systems in place to care for our neighbors. I am personally experiencing housing instability right now, and there is a chance that I will be houseless in the next 2 weeks of my life. I do not have, as an out gay man, a ability to rely back on a wealthy family or any type of wealthy benefactor to keep me off the streets. There is a chance I will lose the two most precious beings in my life, which are my cats. I am a single individual who works full time in this valley with no dependents. I believe in having hope and meditating on hope and the potential for a hopeful future, but simply put, only partaking in prayer is a passive way to avoid action. And I crave more action from the valley that I call the greatest place in this country and the greatest place in this state, only followed up by Philadelphia. I truly think that action is what is called upon from both the universe and our creator right now. And I think that that action is calling us to protect and steward life on this planet. And I think that the humanity of people can be so easily written off by saying that they come from an outside place and therefore do not deserve the neighborly treatment that we have the opportunity to give them. And I do think that it is high time that we see the disadvantages that prioritizing business as a first puts the residents who have called this lovely valley and this lovely city their home for their entire lives. So I really appreciate you allowing me a moment or two. I will yield the rest of my time, but I did want to speak to the humanity of the situation that we're dealing with, as I am someone who you may have to clear out of that area in the next few months. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Lucas. Was there anyone else to my right who wants to make a comment this evening? Yes, and so.
I'll leave it up to the person can, but as I had communicated to Mr. Caratola a couple weeks ago, either mic is going to pick up the audio. Understood, Mr. Cal.
Take my word.
I understand. Please.
Hi, my name is Nori. Thank you for hearing me out. I just want to second that, as the previous person spoke, I'm a person who's also experienced housing instability. I have lived in Houston, Bethlehem, Allentown, and I've had to rely on the kindness of people to let me stay with them, which I'm very grateful for. So I can't speak fully on behalf of people who are fully, you know, outdoors, but I have come close to that being my personal experience, and I've only been able to avoid it, like I said, due to the kindness of friends and community. So when I heard about these potential sweeps, I have to say I don't know all the details. It sounds confusing. It sounds like there's been some information that others have collected that has been contradictory. But I just want to ask that the humanity of the people that are there is considered. It sounds like previously Bethlehem as a city has stated it, that, you know, the parcels that belong to the city, people can be there, but now it sounds like that's not, you know, that's changing due to some of the businesses, such as Norfolk, wanting to evict people. And this is just, like, heartbreaking for me to hear about. As a previous person who spoke said, you know, winter is coming, the weather is going to be changing. People who are in the situation don't usually have a lot of time to figure out where to go. Resources in the area are not very adequate when it comes to shelters and things like that. And yeah, I just basically want to say that I hope that the time can at the very least be extended, that people who are having to live outdoors right now can have, in Bethlehem, can have more time to figure out what to do, and ideally would have a stable place where they can be in a more long-term situation. The other person who spoke brought up Harrisburg has a great model that they've implemented to give people some stability. But yeah, that's all I have to say. I appreciate everyone for hearing me out.
Thank you. Was there anyone else to my right who wants to make a comment? Has it got you? Is there anyone in the room I missed before I move on? All right, thank you, everybody. We're going to move on to our second public comment. So this is for any ordinance or resolution that's up for a vote tonight. We didn't have anyone sign up in advance, so again, I'll go around the room. Is there anyone to the left who wants to make a comment on anything we're voting on this evening? No? Yes, and this one. Put their hand up.
I think I read the agenda correctly. It's a little confusing. There's some stuff on there for new business. I know, I'm sorry to continue to talk here, but it sounds probably like a broken record at this point, but I wanted to applaud you guys and your support staff for continuing to push for grants. There's a couple grants for Bethlehem Emergency Shelters that are on the agenda for tonight. I know that we have a lot of projects in a lot of flux, that we're trying to juggle, both beautifying, making sure everything's walkable, and that we're addressing everything. So I want to applaud your support staff for continuing to do that, and give my support to you guys searching for more funding for all of this, because as we know, we have to come up with the money from this for somewhere. Thank you for continuing to be transparent in giving us information so far as the additional projects that you're doing, whether it's the refurb of the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter, or expanding services, and thank you for trying to do at least the public services side of it. I know that we don't always see eye to eye when it comes to enforcement, but I appreciate that you guys are willing to continue to be transparent with what's going on. Thanks.
Thank you. Was there anyone else to the left who wants to make a comment on anything we're voting on this evening? Anyone in the center who wants to make a comment on anything up for vote? I'll conclude to my right. Thank you, everybody. So that concludes our second public comment. Moving on to old business. Any old business for members of council?
I think this counts as old business.
Go ahead.
Chief Codd, if you want to take the mic. So I appreciated that you did send us some information regarding a comment that someone had brought up at the last meeting about what is the name of the company?
Flock.
Thank you.
Flock.
About the license plate reader camera system, and just to catch people up here, Chief Cott's initial response to us was that no, actually, our data is not sold or shared with any third party, by Flock, that we keep it in the city. And so I did ask her follow-up questions about it, and you explained that it's actually in our contract. It's very specific. Can you just give folks a little bit of what you shared with me?
Yes, just that the third parties do not have any access to our data. Our data is owned exclusively by the city of Bethlehem. We also restrict who has access to it in regard to other law enforcement agencies. And that comes directly through my office. So I have my hands on that as to what other law enforcement agencies we're sharing with. And we are not sharing it with the Department of Homeland Security, ICE.
Thank you. And or ERO, like all three of those, which were ones that were brought up in some of the information that the commenter had shared had come from the ACLU. So I just wanted to say I appreciated that, and that was all I had for old business.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Thank you, Chief. Any other old business from members of council? All right. So we're going to move on to new business. Any new business from members of council?
However you
want to
go.
Okay, I'll start with Councilwoman Francis.
I'm not sure who from administration can answer this, but I know naturally we have the hot issue and pertinent issue right now is the encampments and what we're going to do. And I know that that many people within the Health Bureau and DCD are trying to work on it. But I guess I'm just wondering, I know that it's a crisis situation and we have to do whatever we can, but we've talked about this before, and I'm just going to put it out there again, I'm wondering, why don't we take the developers of Martin Tower up on their offer that they would give us land to do affordable housing, as well as give us money to do affordable housing if we give them the LURTA, because that way we could at least get the land, and I see Mr. Spagnoli is here from the Housing Missions, and he has an awesome program all over the world where he has, for the lack of a better word, I guess, like tiny homes for people who are homeless, inexpensive. But so I'm just thinking that's something that, you know, the developers already said they would do that. I just would implore the administration to sit down with those developers and try to get something going as soon as possible, because that could be one way that we can really help to get these folks into a place of their own and out of, the encampments, especially for the winter. Thank you.
Sir, I appreciate if you didn't interrupt. I will say, like we did the last meeting, I thought it was better just if we stay on this one topic before I give everyone else the floor about other new business individual members may have. So if anyone else wants to comment or has questions related to what Councilwoman Francis Smith brought up as it relates to Norfolk Southern and the letter they sent, we could stay on that topic and then I'll go back around to other members of council. So does anyone have anything else related to that? Mr. Callahan? Mr. Callahan.
I wasn't on council when Mr. Herrick and sent the letter about the tower site, but a lot of you know that I'm good friends with Mr. Ronco, who's a minority owner of the property, and I had, after the last meeting, I had talked to him about, you know, can someone send me the letter that was originally sent to council back then when I wasn't out. And I don't know why we're not having a discussion with them right now, because due to interest rates and the cost of supplies, they can't build anything over there right now, other than the Lehigh Valley hospital buildings that they did over there. They can't do it, and they're not going to. So that property's going to sit there until interest rates come down or the cost of building supplies come down, because they're not going to lose money on it. They have a substantial amount of money invested in the property already for carrying it for all these years, knocking it down, asbestos abatement. And Mr. Reynolds has said last time that you know, they had received some RCAP money. Yes, they did, but that was for the asbestos abatement and a couple other things, which is a small amount of money. It's not even a fraction of the money that they have in the property. So from what I was told, or what I read in the letter, is that they were offering land for affordable housing, and in lieu of fees for the alert. And so it's up to council now, I think, or the administration is not moving on this. We can have all these people come here all the time talking about affordable housing. We aren't doing anything. Nothing. We have, Ms. Collins, you got a second? She's not here.
She's right there.
How much land do we have right now for affordable housing? We have any at all?
The city of Bethlehem does not own any land that we've identified for affordable housing. We have done an evaluation of land that is zoned for residential currently in the city of Bethlehem, not owned by the city of Bethlehem, but that would be considered developable. It's like less than 2% of the land in the entire city of Bethlehem.
Do you know how much acreage that land that you're talking about is?
Just developable land currently, yeah. Not owned by the city?
Yeah.
I mean, our total acreage,
Were you in your position at the time when Mr. Herrick had presented that letter to you?
I've been the director of the Community Economic Development Department since January of 2022.
Do you remember what the amount of money was? I don't remember what the amount of money. I knew there was I think council at that time had bumped it up in lieu of fee up to like $52,000 a unit. And at the time they were thinking about doing 1,000 units. Now they're not even, they don't want to do 1,000 units now. I think right now they're going to do when the timing's right, 880 units. That 1,700 units they don't want to do. So I know
so
that.
So if you're referring to the letter and what was true at that time, they were zoned for 1,085 units.
Right.
They wanted to build 1,700 units, which would require zoning change after the zoning had been changed multiple times.
They don't want to do that anymore.
And they were also looking for Alerta. And as I discussed the last time we talked about this for well over an hour, you know, we don't typically do one-off Alertas, but you know, it is a large property and I understand that, but you know, Alerta is not just, it's not free. It costs the taxpayers money. It is a tax abatement program. So they were looking for 1,700 units and a tax abatement.
Right. I think someone should, maybe yourself or the mayor should reach out to the owners. Because at this point, from what I understand, is they're not even looking to do 1,000 units anymore. They're down at under 900. Don't quote me on it. I think it's 808 units. Because for them to do the 1,700 units, they would have had to build underground parking, and it was extremely expensive to do that, and it's not cost prohibitive. So with the interest rates as high as they are, they're not building at all. They're just going to wait out until there's Alerta or the interest rates and products, building supplies come down. So
we sit here all the time, meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting, and we do nothing. And when I read the letter, I was shocked that everybody on this council had met with the owner, Mr. Herrick. He laid out exactly what he wanted to do, and I understood it at that time. They were looking for 1,700 units, but they're not anymore. They're down under 900 right now. That's it. I think it's 880 is what they're proposing at some point, but they're not doing anything until the financial situation, as far as interest rates, building supplies, and/or Alerta is addressed. They would take, according to that memo at that time, it was going to be like $5 to $6 million that they were going to give to the city for the in lieu of and land for affordable housing. I can't understand why there's no discussion on the administrative level with the owners on this. Like, why? But there's no. I mean, you didn't even know that they didn't want to even do 1,000 units anymore. Neither does the mayor. So, at some point, I would
hope. Spoke with Mr. Anka 2 weeks ago. So it's not that there's not discussion happening with the developers.
All right. So, are you aware that they're not even looking to do 900 units now?
He did not mention that.
I would ask kindly that there's someone from the administration reaches out and see what kind of deal we could possibly get. If the land, if they're donating land for affordable housing and millions of dollars in a lieu of, now I don't know if that, I don't know how many millions, from what I understood, maybe someone on council who was on it at the time can correct me, but it was like $6-7 million if they got the 1,700 units. They obviously don't want to do 1,700 units anymore. It's under 900 now.
And so how much money do they want to give us now?
So I don't know. I think it's the in lieu of amount, which we pass as an ordinance, right? So I think it was 52,000?
51. There's nothing existing at Martin Tower.
No, I know.
There's two different formulas that are used, if I'm remembering correctly. Right. Ms. Collins said so. It would be whatever council set for that particular one.
Right. So my point is, we have two options. Option A, we do nothing, and the land sits there. They've already paid for the land, and they pay hardly any taxes on the empty land because there's no building on it. So it sits there until there's an administration that's willing to help get the project going.
Give them a tax break.
Right. Right. Well, because interest rates are high. It's not really affordable to build right now. So we either do nothing, or we try to get cooler heads together and try to come up with an Alerta, which is a huge piece of property. And what do we do? What do we get if we get the Alerta? We get millions of dollars. How many millions? I don't know, because it's only 880 units now. And we get land, and on top of that, we get 50% of the new value over a 10-year period. We're getting zero money right now. So 50% of millions of dollars in development is better than 0% of zero development. Would you agree with that?
Yes, of course. I agree.
Well, depends on the cost. There's no cost. We're getting zero money right now. On that land, there's no revenue, tax revenue being generated other than the cost of the land. If you put $300 million of development on there, imagine the amount of school district taxes, city taxes, and county taxes. 50% of that huge amount of money is better than zero. But right now we get zero on it. So I don't, you know, it's option A, we do nothing, or option B, we get land for affordable housing, we get money for affordable housing, and we get 50% of a huge tax amount of money. You know, I have been told.
I could go through the same conversation I had 2 meetings ago.
I know.
The entire history of this project.
Right, so I know. But
I'd appreciate if we didn't repeat the hour-long conversation.
I'm just saying it's a very unique
project. The $9 million that they just used to build 2 medical office buildings.
Is that the RCAP money? Yeah, that was for, so that's called smart business, because that was for the remediation of the asbestos. why would you use money on $9 million on asbestos removal when it's the cheapest part of the labor part of it? Do you understand what I'm saying? The asbestos removal is not a really skilled position. And the amount of money to spend on that, they weren't getting the same amount of bang for their buck in using it for the building. But those buildings are now generating huge amounts of tax revenue. So right now, we
they will then capture, because they also have the CRIS benefit on that project as well.
Right, and they could also sell that property to Lehigh Valley Hospital, and guess how much money the city, school district, and county gets? Zero, because they're a nonprofit. We got to think here, and so some people aren't thinking, because they could sell it to Lehigh Valley.
Suggesting I'm not thinking.
Someone's on. So I don't understand why we have we're doing nothing. We get nothing.
Mr. Callahan, I've heard that point a handful of times now. I'm just asking you for the conversation, please.
So I would hope that we do something instead of sitting here doing nothing. That point is my comments.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Anyone else as it relates to Norfolk's other and similar circumstances?
Yep.
Councilman Laird.
Since you're up there, I'll start.
Sure.
Sorry. Not sorry, I don't know why I said so. Okay, so in the, you know, I'm aware that there's many options being discussed with community partners and city staff and about how to help people who are being displaced. Does that include any options of setting up a city-sanctioned tent or tiny home community anywhere?
So there are conversations about safe camping sites. They're not confined to the city. So, you know, we have been very active in the Lehigh Valley Regional Homelessness Advisory Board. We have Ms. Satula, who sits on our governing body. But Ms. Wenrick and myself and Carissa and others have been, you know, not only presenting to the governing body, but also meeting as part of their regular, larger board conversation. And just last week, like, the topic of the conversation was safe camping sites. And there are service providers from all over the Lehigh Valley who are all saying the same thing. Like, this is a regional issue. It's not just a City of Bethlehem or City of Allentown or City of Easton issue. It's an issue that impacts suburbs. It impacts more rural areas in our counties in the Lehigh Valley. And you know, there are examples of safe camping or safe parking sites that have worked, or that are at least being explored in other areas in the state and elsewhere. You know, there's a lot of conversations about, you know, what that would look like from a governance perspective, from a liability perspective. You know, what sites might be appropriate for that. I think, you know, we have made ourselves available to be active participants in those conversations, but I think it's definitely a regional conversation and one where the most potential does seem to be outside of the City of Bethlehem proper. I mean, if you look at between the 62 municipalities in the Lehigh Valley, I think the cities, Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton, have about 4.5% or 5% of the total land area. And so, you know, I think it's really important that we expand that conversation, but it is, you know, a conversation that we're participating in.
Thank you. So not a city sanction, but perhaps a regional solution somewhere that could allow for that sort of thing. Now, when we're looking at the notices that are currently posted or expected to be posted, what property owners are currently seeking support in their enforcement of their private property rights?
So my understanding is that Norfolk Southern has posted there, and then there are two small slivers that are sort of within that general Norfolk Southern area that are owned by either UGI or PennDOT.
Okay, so those three so far, are there any other property owners in the area who, like, along that stretch, who have come forward seeking support in?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. And
I'm not aware of other property owners along the stretch, but I could be.
Okay. I remembered perhaps it was a condo complex, somebody coming in to council once talking about some situation, like, maybe a couple months ago, and I wasn't sure if they had been involved or...
No, I think there are condos along Lehigh Street where there are residents who have expressed concerns about...
Okay, but they're not
the
actually adjacent.
Areas.
Okay.
Or,
okay, and...
But there's nobody currently camping on their properties as far as
right.
I know.
Is it correct that our Parks and Recreation ordinance says that you are not allowed to camp on city property?
Yes, and, you know, we have previously and historically, for example, you know, if somebody tries to set up a tent next to, like, Sand Island Tennis Courts or in the middle of Paper Plaza, it has been our practice to enforce that particular ordinance in, like, those more visible public areas.
Okay.
And I wouldn't constitute that as a sweep. I mean, that's just, that has been our practice.
Right, and it is currently legislation that we're, that
it is not one. It is an ordinance, yes.
Okay. And, but the no trespassing orders or eviction notices or whatever those are officially called are technically not about that property. They are about, even though it is not allowed to be camped there, it is about the Norfolk Southern EGI and PPL properties.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. And then the last question that I had was, I do recall Councilman Callahan bringing his friend who owns the tiny house company along on his campaign. And I think that I spoke to him at our debate, actually. So I'm wondering, that company that wants to sell tiny homes or any other, can a private property owner or developer offer to allow those who need to camp on their property, or, you know, can they set up accessory dwelling units, perhaps like tiny homes, throughout the city to invite unhoused people onto their private property for housing? So, for example...
So, as with any development on any private property, there are certain existing laws that would impact if somebody could or could not build something. So it would really depend on the circumstance, but obviously zoning would be a first place to look. So it would be a question of, you know, what zoning district are we talking about? What is the size of the parcel? You know, is it a vacant parcel on which they're just going to put a couple of different, you know, tiny homes? Not that I think that there's parcels that are necessarily appropriate to do that on or large enough where that they exist. But if they did exist, I mean, those would be the kind of questions that you would ask.
Sure, and I know we've talked about accessory dwelling units in other contexts before, and it's, you know, another popular debate topic, right? But it boils down to the same type of structure, housing people. So, you know, and I wondered if there are people who are like, hey, I'd like to help. Can I build a tiny home?
So
they would have to go through zoning, is what you're saying.
Correct.
And if there were a developer, you know, I'm saying Martin Tower site just because that is the one that was come up in question, who wanted to allow even the temporary use of their land at no cost to help the community. They could do that as long as zoning allowed for tiny homes?
Zoning, yeah, you would have to look at it from a zoning perspective, and if zoning didn't allow it, you could seek variances, you know, as an example. If that were a project that somebody wanted to pursue, they would have to bring something like that forward.
Right.
Zoning review.
And zoning, in that circumstance, would apply to the type of structure, not to the type of resident within the structure,
of course.
Correct?
Yes.
So if we allow tiny homes, we allow tiny homes in that area. Okay, I think that's all the questions, and I thought I was going to have to ask Chief Cop, but I think that you answered the property question that I had for. Thank you.
Anyone else on this topic? Councilwoman Quaytek.
Thank you. Ms. Collins, I want to say that there was an incredible meeting last week on Wednesday, the Opening Doors update meeting, at which Mr. Riddle and Ms. Smith, who from the New Bethany and Community Action gave a very thorough overview of the work that's going on along with Ms. Tuvola and Ms. Collins to address the needs of the folks who are living on the properties that are impacted right now. Everybody's story, I think, as the woman who came and spoke to us at the last meeting shared her story, you know, everyone's story, everyone's challenges, everyone's obstacles to housing security are a little bit different. And I know that Ms. Noonan and others have commended the work that's going on. And I would say that that work has been ongoing for a long time. It's not like Norfolk Southern dropped a letter on us and it's like, oh no, we've got to start doing something. Let's start talking to these people. This has been going on for a long time. The urgency of a deadline obviously kind of hardens the steel a bit, right? And makes everybody kind of coalesce and come together a little stronger. But the conversation that went on during that meeting was, it was over 2 hours long and everybody stayed. Because there is so much going on, and that's not much comfort to folks who are being told they have to leave where they are on December 15th. But to say that nothing is happening is just simply not true. And so anyone who would take the time to actually listen to the reports and read emails that we're receiving and all of that would know that we've got 11 non-congregate family units that will be affordable units for housing insecure and homeless families coming online right in the heart of Packer Avenue on the south side. That'll be coming online in unfortunately probably over a year, but still. We've got obviously the Gateway at 4th. There's a new project on 3rd Street that is a partnership with New Bethany, I believe, two properties that are going to be rehabilitated into quite a number of units of affordable housing. Obviously the Gateway 4th is a big one, and then there's Choice Neighborhoods, which is astoundingly going to take a 196-unit housing neighborhood and result in over 450 units of housing. And again, yes, it takes years for these things to happen. The pace is never fast enough. But I will say that there is a tremendous amount of work being done. And you know, the conversation we had a couple of weeks ago, I was just kind of jarring my memory on this. But you know, first of all, I think understanding what a LRTA is so important because each of these LRTA zones is different. So the first LRTA zone that had a payment in lieu of it was 20-ish thousand. The second one, Ms. Cramsey Smith and others on the council at the time advocated to double it, and it did get doubled for that particular new zone of LRTA, which again was very difficult to develop places. And it has resulted in some, we are seeing results to that. So if a LRTA were to be created on the Martin Tower property, and at the time of those meetings, they were talking about 1,700 units, it would have been 107 units at 54,000, 170, right, times 54,000, because the payment in lieu of is one for every 10 units. It would have been something like $9 million payment in lieu of, except that's not what they were telling us they were going to give us. They were going to give us half of that. And it was like, but we'll give it to you up front. So I'm just putting that out there. That's how I recollect the meeting, and others who had these meetings maybe could speak to that as well. At the time that they spoke to us, there wasn't an offer of land. I don't know, maybe that happened in a different conversation, but that certainly was not presented to me in the meeting that I had. And so what they were offering us was give us a big giant tax break and we'll give you half of the money. If you give us the LRTA and we get this tax break, we'll actually only give you half of the money that you're owed for this if we made the payment in lieu of $54,000 a unit. That's how I remember the conversation. Somebody can certainly correct me if I'm wrong on that. But again, I just want to say that I am constantly heartened by the people who come come to support our unsheltered neighbors, and I worry that empathy will fray because these times are difficult and people are suffering. And so I want to thank you all for coming out and continuing to press on this as we continue to try to solve problems that, as someone said, are not of our making.
Any other members of council on this topic? Councilwoman Leo?
So I had a couple statements / questions. I remember the LERTA conversation, and we talked about this a little bit ago, but my idea of the LERTA has changed from the initial conversations right now. I believe I said this at the last time. I'd be more than happy to engage in a conversation about what a LERTA would look like appropriately in that area. I think I would want to know how many units they want to do, if they are willing to give land, and we as a council would have to discuss what a LERTA would look like in that area. I'd like the idea of using tax abatements to incentivize housing. I think that's an appropriate use of these tax incentives. But I will say, like, when we're talking about, like, the housing continuum, affordable housing is so far down the line of what we're looking at. We're looking at homelessness, emergency shelters, congregate shelters, community shelters, then affordable rentals. So, like, I love this conversation, but I just don't think it's, like, it's a little bit too far down the line of what's happening at the canal. So I hope that we continue to have conversations about what a LERTA would look like over there. You know, whoever gets to forum council gets what they want. So if there's a LERTA, then we should have conversations about it. But when it comes specifically to what's happening at the canal, that's just, we'd have to go through that process, build the units, and that's not going to help what's going on, like, right now. So I did have a couple of questions, because there was some statements about an officer saying that we were sweeping encampments, and I just don't think that that's true of the canal specifically. So can you shed a little bit of light on what's happening there?
So absolutely. So I was able to, and I do apologize for being late, I was able to hear part of what Ms. Noonan was saying. The reason that we accompanied North Oak Southern is because their police department is very, very small. And they cover the tri-state area, so they're covering New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and beyond. And they, admittedly, are not that familiar with the area. So they asked us, as well as our community connections team, to accompany them down to their property and kind of help out, guide them as to, like, where their property is. In regards to the sweeps, we are not trouncing through the woods seeking people out. We're primarily going to the areas where North Oak Southern, UGI, and PennDOT are the property owners and where they want those specific areas posted. We are, as Ms. Collins said, letting folks know that if they are trying to camp on city park property, that they cannot. That's something that's always been our stance. And it is something that we've shown discretion in the past with when we go out to somebody who's trying to set up a camp here or down at Sand Island, we go down with community connections. We have conversations with those folks. We're not citing and arresting them right away. We are very, very aware. We'd be incredibly ignorant if we weren't aware of how complex this issue is and how community connections has been a godsend, because they've really enabled us to try to help people in getting help with whether it be housing, food insecurity, joblessness, any social service, unmet social service need that they may have. So I know that was a little bit all over the place, but we're not, our goal right now is not sweeps. Our goal right now is to try to get people housing, to try to get people help. The last thing we want to do is go down there and have to arrest somebody. And being able to work with our community partners like New Bethany, Conference of Churches, street medicine, being able to work hand-in-hand with Community Connections is what our plan of attack is right now, to try to help people, especially considering us reaching the colder winter months.
So when you guys go down, whether it's you or Community Connection or anything like that, so we have people that already are currently living there, and we're going to have to figure out as a community what's going to happen when the whole Norfolk Southern thing happens. Are you seeing new people come in? And if you are you guys actively engaging in conversations to make sure that they're not getting so settled to only just then be disrupted? So like if I show up down there tonight and need to, and find myself living there, what are we doing to make sure that the person knows what's inevitably coming before they get too settled in?
Sure, so I can speak a little bit to that. As was alluded to before, we've been doing this work well before the Norfolk Southern notice. We've had a Community Connection staff that's pretty much primarily dedicated to working with the homeless population. So we've been down in the encampments doing outreach, holding care events where they're resource events, bringing everybody, as far as our service providers together in one location, one-stop shop type service, holding bi-weekly calls with service providers to coordinate services. So I know you're all well aware of this. We've issued several memos stating, kind of summarizing all the efforts that we've been making. But we are down there pretty much every day with our community partners. So we know who is down there. We know their background. We know what service they're connected to or not connected to. And we continually are doing counts down there. New people, unfortunately, are coming in. So as we're helping people, we are also counting new people coming in. Obviously, Allentown is closing their encampment at the end of this month. So that's impacting some of our numbers because we are having some folks from Allentown come into Bethlehem. But we are continually communicating that message so they know what's going to be happening as far as deadlines and where they can go as far as services. And as stated in the memo to council yesterday, we are making progress. Obviously, this is a complicated issue. It's very resource intensive, and we're really trying to focus on connecting people to housing and all those other social supports. And we have, as of today now, 22 people connected with intensive case management.
So I'd love to hear the work. I'm curious, I know that like we're going to reach a point where people are scrambling because December is going to get here before we realize it. We do have community partners that have public spaces. I'm not necessarily thinking the universities because they'll be actively in session. But UCC is not the only church in Bethlehem. There's plenty, I see steeples everywhere. I'm not sure about the separation between, what we do and what congregations do, but has there been any active outreach on our part, or has there been any outreach on the part of any of the churches that are willing to be part of the conversation, especially if they have space that's vacant, like 6 days out of
Conference of Churches has taken the lead on that. I'm looking at some church property, but we haven't had any follow-up meetings, so that's something that's been stated. I mean, right now, it's like all options are on the table. We're exploring how we can leverage current partnerships. We're also applying for grants that we're hoping to secure that can help with some of the emergency housing. So if we need to house somebody, for example, in a hotel until we can get them into a more permanent situation, we're seeking that funding. So, with all the expertise and all the partners, we're looking at innovative ways that we can leverage what's already existing.
Thank you. I'm going to throw my support behind, I believe, Councilman Garrett spoke about this. Like, the encampments are happening, whether they're legal or not, whether people like them or not, whether people don't like them. So anything that could kind of, maybe if there is an area that allows for camping to kind of give some space between a public park and where people are living. It also kind of clears up the lines for the police officers that are being asked to enforce things and then being, like we're saying we don't want it, but these are active laws of the books. So I think that there's a lot of things that need to be cleared up. Obviously not going to be cleared up in 2 hours on a Tuesday night. But thank you for the work. I know I'm going to have other questions. Probably ask at the next council. Thank you.
Councilwoman Wilhelm.
Ms. Lamrick, I had a couple of questions for you, and actually you answered one of them already, or something I was hoping that you would clarify for folks who are tuned in and here at this meeting, knowing that this is an issue that rightfully concerns many residents of Bethlehem and beyond. We have the privilege of knowing about the work that you do and receiving your memos. Thank you for the most recent one that really highlighted what a coordinated and collaborative effort this is that you're partaking in, and was hoping that you would take a moment to articulate community connections, that phrase being not thrown around, used here, maybe not clear to those new to council meetings, that we are referring to an initiative, a program that is a sustained, proactive initiative. The words community connections, you could be talking about something a lot less intentional and impactful than the work that you do. So I think you've highlighted that, you've summarized that, and just I did want folks to know that this is not a reactive, suddenly throw your hands up in the air, something's happening, you better do. It's these are long-term services, relationship that you're providing, trusted relationships, and you know these individuals, and we really appreciate your work with this program. Specifically, with regard to the memo that you provided, I did have one question just about a program that I knew a little bit less about, the Northampton County Law Enforcement-Led Initiative, which was new to me. You mentioned two things. One, you mentioned some barriers to entry. I was curious about what those might be. My second question about that particular program is any residential treatment involved in that program?
Yes, and Chief, you can chime in as well. So the LEHI program is a diversion program, so if somebody is arrested and charged, it gives them the option if they have a substance use disorder, that they can get into treatment. We have had some issues where charges have eventually been dropped, so then that person does not end up going to treatment. So we just need to talk more to the county and to the DA's office to find out exactly if we need to be doing something different on our end, or they need to be doing something different on their end, if it's not the communication that's happening both ways. So I know Chief was going to be reaching out.
So entry into the program is arrest dependent?
Yes, so if charges get dropped, then the person doesn't need to go into treatment. So the charges must stay, and then they go into treatment.
I see, that's an interesting problem to have. And you said that some of that treatment is potentially residential, long-term,
I believe,
or short-term residential.
It is, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your answers and your work, both of you.
Any other new business on this topic before we move on? Councilwoman Francis Smith.
Thank you. I just have a question. You said there were 20 individuals for ICM, intensive case management. I assume that's under mental health to the county, right?
It's not through the county. It's through a provider.
Okay. Are they hooked up with the county, though?
Yes.
I mean, the county's
actively involved.
Okay.
The mental health.
So I'm wondering, like, for those specifically, is the county able to provide any community living arrangements like CRR or anything? Like, they do group homes for people that have mental health, or have they been... have they said, do they have any openings, or can they, I mean, if it's a crisis, somebody is, when I worked for the county, if someone was homeless, we would make sure they got into a residence, depending on what their issue was or disability.
So the county has been on site, Northampton County, both mental health and drug and alcohol have been on site with us as we've been doing some of our events. So they're doing drug and alcohol assessments and linking people to services. I can't speak specifically to what they've done, like as far as housing people in any of their...
That's just one thing, because I said it before, I mean, as a city, we don't have human services, and the county has a whole human services department, and I would say that we really need to, you know, have a bridge with them and say, what do they have residentially that they can do for these folks, because it's a crisis. I mean,
they're involved in all of our meetings and discussions.
I would put it on the table with them, like, do you have anything residential, or if not, what can you do? I mean, we even... And Lehigh County had a respite program in a hotel, a motel that we were an apartment that we were granted, that we would put people there when they became homeless. I mean, that was a bit ago, but I would really push the county. No offense to the county, but they have the funds and they do, you know, the programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Laird.
I thought of an additional question. So, you know, we're coming into budget season, and if I'm recalling correctly, I was just trying to search our budget to find the exact number, but I couldn't. We set aside as a city money to help with building a year-round shelter when the support, you know, because the city could help fund infrastructure but isn't going to operate a shelter, which makes sense. There are experts who do that. And the primary emergency sheltering in Bethlehem right now is BEFs. And I understand they're mostly volunteer run, and you know, have a lot on their plates for focusing on the seasonal work that they do. But I also haven't directly heard any updates about any plans for converting to a year-round shelter. And I could certainly reach out to Mr. Rapp if need be, but I wasn't sure if anyone here has any updates on BES and the potential for becoming a longer-term shelter.
I know Laura meets with Bob on a regular basis, so you know.
Yeah, I'm happy. I would also refer you back. We did write an email, I think, right around when Norfolk Southern first made this announcement that was pretty comprehensive and included both Packer Avenue and BES. But just to expand on that a little bit more, we are meeting with BES regularly. We do have in our budget, as thanks to City Council, about $2 million set aside for that project. The total project cost is $6 million. So we've gone through preliminary design. We have that cost estimate. We are actively fundraising. You'll see tonight on the agenda that there are two grant applications that are directly related to that project.
Yes.
So, you know, it's been, you know, quite some time that we've been working with BES, working with them on where they are. You know, they are now, you know, got committees on their board that are gearing up for a capital campaign. They're having their first big fundraiser, actually, October 3rd, the shindig at the shelter. So I would encourage anybody who's able to buy tickets to that to support it. But, you know, we're helping on the public funding side, which is why you're seeing, you know, our applications for LSA and RCAP for that project specifically. And they're also working, you know, internally at BES on an operational strategic plan so that they can transition to year-round. They are very volunteer-driven. It is not a small ask of them to ask them to go year-round, and you know, we're trying to help them and encourage them and work with them on the strategy behind doing that and how they can get from where they are now to where they need to be. You know, with respect to like funding for year-round operations, you know, we did take on the ESG administration, the Emergency Solutions Grant through the state for the entire region, and part of our thought process in doing that was, as the municipal entity that is handling that money out-town did previously, we are now, they couldn't capacity-wise continue to do it, and they kind of stepped up and said, we are really busy, but we're going to do it anyway because it's going to be able to give us some more flexibility to help BES with potential funding for operations to go year-round as well. So. Yeah, we also worked with BES and their board to get an MOU signed to sort of solidify this, you know, agreement. And you know, we're working, and it's taken some time, but we're working with the church as well. You know, it's an interesting dynamic. It was a little bit easier with Packer Avenue, where it was just us and Conference of Churches kind of working through this. But here you've got us and BES and the church itself, who's got the actual facility. So you know, you're working through that as well, because that's an important part of the grant applications, is to be able to demonstrate, you know, property control to some extent. So that is the update on that.
Okay. Yeah, and I apologize. I, like somebody else had said, there's been a lot of information, and I do have your email here, and I guess I was looking for more of a timeline update. Like, could this be a solution for they just go year-round when they would normally close this spring? But it sounds like it's still pretty far. Like, that wouldn't be realistic to expect that they would just stay open this year.
Yeah, well, there's two components. There's one, there's the actual capital improvements,
right,
which is a $6 million project. But if they wanted to exist in the same facility with no improvements but go year-round, I mean, there's a lot of barriers to that in the physical space, but even if they wanted to do that operationally, like, I don't believe that is something that they are. I mean, they have told us that that's not something that they're capable of doing year-round right now with their staff, with volunteers, and not just for financial reasons, but just because their model currently is one that would make it difficult for them to go year-round.
Okay. And then I think this would probably be a community connections type question. So we've heard a lot of people saying, like, okay, yes, we have 4 months instead of, you know, the 1 or 2 months that Allentown had, and that's good, but it's the dead of winter, and, you know, can't we, like, have a heart and wait? From a, like, community connections and social services perspective, seasonally in our area, is there an advantage to waiting until the other side, which would include like when I'm thinking about this, I'm like, okay, somebody's gonna be camping outside no matter what, right? Like, and we have an emergency shelter open in the winter that can take some, not all, of the people for whatever reasons. But if we wait until spring, like has been requested, then people are staying in the encampment until, you know, through the coldest months of the year, January, February, when we have the absolute lowest temperatures in this area, typically. And I understand that the encampment allows for some more, it doesn't actually allow it, but there are some more semi-permanent structures set up, and people have fires, again, not actually allowed, but they do. But is there any advantage to waiting to spring versus taking advantage of the 4 months to get people out of the encampment before the coldest time of the year?
Well, I think first the deadline wasn't imposed, obviously, by the city. That deadline came from Norfolk Southern, and they wanted to coincide it to make sure that there was a sheltering option available, which obviously BES will be open by then.
Okay. And in that social services perspective, like, is there just general... There's no good time, right? Like,
yeah, there's not really a good answer to that, because no matter what time you select, because if you select after BES is closed, then it's like, well, where's the sheltering option?
Right.
So yeah, it's like, okay. There's pros and cons, I think, with any. Like when Allentown closed their shelter, there wasn't a sheltering option open. Now there will be, but at that point in time, their shelter wasn't even slated to be open. So.
Right. So, okay. I that's kind of where I was landing, like, in my head, but I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing some, like, well, yes, obviously you would wait until this other time. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Mr. Callahan?
No, I just want to, as I've said in my email back, you, I want to thank you for everything you did. I mean, you're going above and beyond duty right now. And one city employee is working so hard as you are on his, people need to congratulate you for a good job. As it was stated, there's no good time, to move anybody. But I think I would prefer that they get moved before the cold weather, and then during the winter months while the shelter's open, we have a little bit more time to find alternative situations for everybody. I think that's probably the best way to go on it. But I just want to thank you again for everything you're doing. I know you spent a lot of time down there, and you're very well versed with all the individuals down there. And I want to thank you for the email and the very in-depth information that you sent council. Thank you.
Thank you. But it's the community connections team. I can't take all the credit. They're down doing the outreach every day.
Thank you. Anybody else on this topic before we just proceed to their typical new business? Thank you, Ms. Frederick. Thank you, Ms. Collins. Thank you, Chief Cott. We still are on new business, though, so I'll open it up. Any new business from members of council? Councilman Leo?
I had a couple of questions about things that were brought up. So the Lanta bus stop that's going up on the bridge is actually something that's come up quite a bit in the Public and Green Space Committee over on the south side, because that Lanta bus stop is going up onto the bridge, but also coming down to that stop, there's about two places where it says no pedestrian, like nope, there's no crosswalks, but it also prohibits pedestrians from walking. So it's kind of in this really wonky space. And I know that at least the Public and Green Space Committee has identified it as a place we would love to see investment. So this is really just bringing it to the attention that this is something that has come up in conversation quite regularly, not just with the business owners down there, but with community members in general, that they would like to see that that bus stop become a little bit more just accessible, just friendly to put the pedestrians that are walking down there, with clear signage where they can actually get to the bus stop at. So that was the park. The two gentlemen who came to speak about the downtown business issues in general, specifically South Bethlehem, I was curious, you talked about the north side, sorry, Ms. Collins. You talked about the issues that the north side has, like, a list of what they kind of have identified as priorities. I'm curious if the businesses in South Bethel have done that as well. I mean, I've talked to some people one-on-one about what they would like to see, that the replacement of benches and stuff like that comes up quite regularly. But is there something similar on the south side, as like the north side, that has a specific list of capital projects that the city can actually help? I'm not talking sidewalks here, but is there something like that for the south side?
So on the north side, you have the DBA / chamber. On the south side, you have the Southside Arts District. And we use, you know, both of those bodies to really be like our bridge to the business businesses and you know, business interests in those areas. Actually, the Southside Arts District might even at this point be a little bit better positioned, because, you know, they agreed to have us go in for a Main Street Matters grant to do strategic planning for the Southside Arts District to, you know, kind of take what has existed there for 7 or 8 years and really look at, like, if we wanted to actually get a Main Street designation here and, you know, look at all of the different components of that, which includes beautification, like capital type improvements, you know, what would it take to get there? And so they're undertaking strategic planning right now. So I actually think what's going to come out of that is better than just a bullet point list of like things that people are jotting down on paper, and it's going to be much more strategic. There's going to be a lot more engagement, thoughtful with the businesses, both those that are engaged with the Southside Arts District and those that might not be that engaged. There's still going to be some thoughtful outreach there as well. And the goal would be that coming out of that plan, you're going to have not just a list of needs, but you're going to have a strategy around how to tackle them, and also some thoughtfulness behind like what's some sustainable funding and some ways that we can really like grow this Southside Arts District in a way that's going to address, you know, a whole wide range of needs. So that's maybe doesn't answer your question directly. I mean, is there currently like a bullet point to checklist, like to-do list? I don't have one of those from the Southside Arts District. Yeah, but we do engage with their, you know, green space or design committees and whatnot, and work through projects if they come up.
So they had put out a grant opportunity a couple of weeks ago that I had seen come through, which is incredible, because grants for businesses come along like never. So it's great to see grants for businesses. And I'm just curious, you know, if there's anything else like that on the horizon, because like specifically South Bethlehem got hit really rough this summer. The businesses got hit really bad with the road work. Nobody's blaming you, Mike. We all know. But with the students gone and then the street closures, it was really bad. So I'm just curious, like...
Yeah, so that was another Main Street Matters grant that we got through BEDCO. And okay. So we created the big program, the business improvement grants. We have $35,000, and then it's a one-for-one match, so the businesses will match, and they can ask for up to $5,000. So it could be basically $70,000 of investment. And it's available for both North and Northside Alive and Southside Arts District. And we had over $40,000 in requests from a wide range of businesses. I want to say there were at least a dozen, maybe 15 different applicants with a range of projects, really good ones. So we're going through and evaluating those now. We're obviously going to fund as many as we can. But yeah, the response to that was really, really strong. So it's a good tool. The fact that we had so many responses does indicate that if we can find some additional funding for a program like that, I think we continue to see interest in it.
Yeah, I would love to see anything, or just be kept in the loop about anything that's going on there. I know that we've talked about kind of the inconvenience of construction in the downtown area. We've talked about, you know, being down a garage while we're going into the Christmas city over, like Christmas season over here on the north side.
Have a garage in November, so we will have a garage for this Christmas.
My bad, you know, one. But like, especially like on 3rd and New, there's going to be construction on both sides of 3rd, with the hotel, with and these are all great projects. It's all like, you know, it's amazing. It's a vibrant city. But that traffic really slams the small businesses, and they are just in this economy. So the other question I had, this might be Mr. Alcohol, but traffic on the south side in general. Bond Place brought this up, Sam, but Bond Room brought this up. South side traffic is intensely wild. And people drive the wrong way on one way, which is illegal, obvious. but so many people do it. And I'm just curious as to what triggers a traffic study outside of development when people are existing in a space, like if they're showing you that they're just gonna turn this way and there's nothing you can do about it, like what do we do to keep up with the traffic patterns as they continue to evolve? Because the traffic patterns of Southside in 2025 are not the traffic patterns of 2017 or 2010. Like the intensity of the through traffic, and I know state roads are state roads, but the intensity of the through traffic, the commuter traffic coming in, if you add that to how the students get to Brockle and Donegan, it's intense over there. So I'm just curious, what does trigger a traffic study in an area, or how do you track like hot spots where you're seeing a lot of just improper use of roads, if that's how I would word that. And I also want to say, Brian just came out to talk to Indian Hill about the traffic improvements that have been done at Indian Hill, and he was incredible. Traffic and parking are not easy community meetings to have, and he handled it with grace and poise and really intelligent and thoughtful traffic calming measures. So I just want to make sure that he's doing an incredible job.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of things you can look at. Some of what's being described is people are not following the traffic control appropriately. Quite honestly, the most applicable thing you could do to try to address that is enforcement, surveillance enforcement, whatever means you can deploy or employ in order to correct that. If it's a capacity issue, meaning delays, there's no, it would have to be just observations in terms of congestion and that sort of thing that could trigger, okay, let's evaluate. For example, we did numerous efforts and numerous studies because of the significant delays and congestion on Wyandotte Street, and we evaluated one-way pairing. Unfortunately, in a heavily urbanized area like this, and the way it's been built with a low capacity single lanes in each direction, we're very limited in terms of being able to affect capacity improvements.
Yeah.
So the other methods of trying to address that is, you know, synchronizing the traffic signal, for example, in Lincoln. But it's something, accident history is usually used to address a problem. Capacity concerns would be based on community observations, and over time that's identified that there's a concern on this road or that road, and then we would evaluate it, do traffic counts, and assess what the problem is and if there's any feasible solutions to avoid.
Okay, so if there is a community concern that is a viable community concern, i.e. like, I know where I live, I see traffic all the time. So every person who blows through a stop sign, to me, that's like that's the 1,000th person today that's blown through a stop sign. I know that it's not, but I'm seeing it all the time.
Right.
So how do you differentiate between just like, I see this all the time, so I feel like this is a problem, versus how do you identify places that are genuinely problems so that you can do a traffic study? I don't know if I'm phrasing this question well. So I guess I'm wondering, can any person trigger a traffic study, or do you have to meet a certain like threshold of things to have a traffic study?
Probably the easiest way to answer that is, you know, we've encouraged people who observe issues to call them in, and we do keep records, regarding traffic complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a case built for a specific problem at an intersection, then that would obviously trigger us evaluating and try to address it.
Okay, great, thank you.
Anything else from members of council?
Yeah, I don't want to follow up on that specific thing.
Yeah,
so since I know we're trying to stay on the same matter.
I'd like everyone, we've been on new business for an hour, so
yeah.
We'll
yes.
have the floor to talk about whatever issues you'd like, council.
Okay,
I'm done with my question.
It happens,
yeah,
to,
gotcha.
It happens to just
I understand, just please encompass what you have so we're not jumping around and everyone having the floor one time for whatever other topics come up.
You got it.
Whatever questions you have.
So I had specifically reached out about that intersection a little while ago, and I was similarly wondering, so not with regard to a larger traffic study, but just in that, in a sort of a micro sense, right? Like, if the data, if it's not a high accident area, if the data doesn't really compel, then obviously Mr. Mazzone was here tonight at the meeting and wanted to, you know, speak this sort of into public record. You know, you mentioned something about sort of observation. Obviously, somebody who's spending most of their waking hours at that corner, which is not a highly populated corner, that's going to be our best sort of source of information. Do you sort of have one-on-one meetings with individuals? What do you recommend sort of someone in Mr. Mazzotto's situation do next to sort of help provide the observations or the data? Because a near miss is a near miss, so maybe he's seeing, I mean, I drive through that intersection daily and I naturally slow down because I know it's not people going the wrong way. It's people disregarding the stop sign and kind of moving through as if they don't realize it's a little bit of a visual sort of barrier to the right. So what would be that next step?
One of the things that frustrate people the most is that we mostly focus on and rely on accident history, reportable events that result in consequences in order to actively seek solutions. When you have near misses, there's nothing that happens out of them, they become a little more difficult and challenging to deal with because, you know, we don't have any, you know, concrete evidence of the problem. But I would encourage that we just continue dialogue, continue reporting it. And then I'm pretty confident that if the problem exists and there is feasible solutions to address it, we will definitely pursue it.
So even to suggest that he sort of take anecdotal notes and share them with you.
We would be more than happy to work with him.
Great.
To address this.
Appreciate that. Because I know sometimes, again, it's a micro situation. It's important to the people who live, walk, work, play, ride through that one particular intersection. And ideally, there's a low-hanging solution.
You have something to add? Yeah, not to steal my thunder. Just from the Health Bureau perspective, there's two things. So we do have a Citizens Traffic Advisory Committee that meets monthly, so residents can leverage it, their complaints there, and Mike has his staff there, as well as police, PennDOT's represented. So we do have multiple agencies that are part of that, and that's part of the discussion if residents have certain concerns, so they can certainly bring it forth there. And then secondly, we do pedestrian stings as well, so the Health Bureau will go out. So although, like Mike said, you know, they do rely on accident data, we will have some of our staff where they'll just act as a pedestrian and going back and forth in certain intersections that we may get complaints on to see if there's any, you know, true issues there. So it is one way we can do it without actually having an accident occur.
Okay. Thank you for those additional resources.
Anything else, Council?
That's it.
Mr. Callahan.
Thank you. Ms. Collins, did the $350,000 that the Parking Authority given to the is it to the DBA?
So I did double check. It is $307,000. So it's not $350. I wanted to correct that. And so the Parking Authority is actually paying for the poles themselves. Like they are purchasing the light poles.
Good. Is do we know how much money the Parking Authority gives to the city in grants or donations or basis.
So the city specifically, or
yeah, I know there's been other
organizations.
Well, I know that several times that I've been in council that I've heard, hey, you know, Park Authority's going to donate some money for this or grant some money to this. Do you know how much money on a yearly basis they give us?
Well, so again, I'll sort of separate. So the Parking Authority does contribute to a number of community organizations. So they contribute to the Southside Arts District, I believe $100,000 a year. They contribute to the DBA or Chamber. I forget which one gets the actual dollars, but I think that's also about $100,000 a year. They contribute to the Southside Ambassadors, newly starting in 2025. So that's a very popular program on the Southside that does, you know, clean up and speaks with folks who come around. So in light of some funding changes from some of the other funding sources, the BPA has stepped up and is contributing to that program as well. And though sometimes there's one-off projects that the BPA can contribute to, like when we redid Fairview Park, they sponsored a little bit of that project as well. I can have Mr. Fernstrom kind of document all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gone over it before, but I know, you know, I think we're pretty fortunate that it's a part of their and the board's mission to contribute when they.
I only bring it up because parking, the parking authority gets beat up a lot. And it's a tough, tough position for us, especially if the meter mains are out there. And it's nice to know that the parking authority does a lot of good in the city. And I don't think people realize that. I mean, they're spending $307,000 on new streetlights with that. And one of the benefits of that is all the lights are going to be substantial enough to hold a pot of plants on them. So I think the beautification of the downtown area is going to be substantial. And it's the parking authority, you know, thing for that. So if he could, or if you could, or if he could get a list together so council's aware of it and the rest of the city's aware of it, you know, and I'd appreciate it. Thank you. Mr. Spurk, you got a second?
Yeah, I'm free.
I don't want to make any comments on the situation with our ex-employee, especially after the comments that were out there already. But I sent you a memo just asking for an internal investigation on whether Chief, what's the name of the reporting?
Mark 43.
Mark 43. I'm not asking for it to be made public. I'm just asking, and I don't think the DA would be doing this because they already said that there's no other issues with the city or any other employees. So I'm just asking you or someone, I don't know who would do it, to see, just to see if an internally, privately, just so we're aware of it, if he went into the Mark 43 system and researched any police reports outside of the scope of his duties. That's all I was asking for. I think that's fair.
I have every reason to believe the investigation is doing that, the DA's office. But if they don't,
sure.
Please, I appreciate it, because I just, I think it's something that we as a city should know if it was being abused or not. I'm not saying it was, I'm not accusing him of that. I would hope that the district attorney would do that, but if they're not, if it could be, if you look, I don't know if you saw in the memo, but I asked for an internal investigation on it, and that's all I was asking for. And maybe if there isn't, no need for us to be informed about it. But if there was, maybe we could be informed in an executive session or something like that.
Yeah, I just don't want to step on them,
right?
They're doing it now.
No, I told you to thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Any other new business? Councilman Laird.
First, just three thanks. One, echoing Councilman Quiatek's thanks on following up on the flock research you did. Privacy is one of my things, so thank you. Thank you to Ms. Adwello for all of her work on the World Heritage Community Block Party. It was really cool to see so many different populations coming together who might be interested in various facets of that recognition for our city, and also, like, particularly really loved seeing that mural down in the tunnel. If you haven't seen it already, the tunnel that goes between kind of the Hotel Bethlehem and historic land there down towards Moravian's South Campus has a beautiful mural in it now, which I didn't know was even coming up, so cool. Thank you so much for your work on that, and everyone else who contributed. And also to Public Works, thank you for, I was over on Pennsylvania Avenue and I saw that the residents who had come and talked about the lines differentiating the parking area from the travel area on their road, that has been followed through on, and even in a longer span of the road than I expected it to be. So Hopefully that solves their concerns and wasn't too much of a burden on the team. But thank you for listening to their concerns. Regarding the bus stop at 2nd and New and other bus stops, we've previously talked about the Broad and Getter Transit Center and the potential for public restrooms there, the potential for providing some warmth for people who are waiting in the winter. I was made aware that Atlanta received a $1.2 million grant recently for what they're calling efficiencies and rider amenities on express routes. And I wondered if Bethlehem staff have already been in conversation, maybe even as part of the grant application process, about any specific improvements to sites within the city. I know Allentown commented in the article I had read about some improvements coming to the Allentown Transit Center, and I know we've already done some work in Bethlehem on our transit center, but is there anything new and exciting that we should be expecting to see coming out of that grant? Well, perhaps we
just could, for the purposes of the microphone, that was not at this moment.
Correct. I look forward to hearing about anything that might come out of that, and perhaps we could talk about benches over at that that particular stop and others that don't have them. That's a really great grant for them to have received. So, all right, thank you. That's it.
Any other new business from members of council? Just two quick things, because it did come up, and thank you, Ms. Wondering, about the Citizens Traffic Advisory Committee. I will note it meets again on October 7th, and then again on December 2nd, if those dates are correct on the website. And that's at 8:30 a.m. here in City Hall. And then that's listed under Citizens Traffic Advisory Committee for anyone who's following along and was interested. That's on the city website, and we'll talk with I know it had come up during public comment previously about noting it on the city website. Someone couldn't find it, and everybody kind of coordinated getting that on there. So I'll just ask that we make sure that we update that part of the website at the end of the year for the dates for 2026. And then I just briefly want to comment on just Martin Tower as a whole. Some of the conversations that were mentioned earlier happened a few years ago, so I'm not going to go by memory for things that I haven't looked at in a while. Other than I just hope whatever conversations happen moving forward and in whatever capacity happen in good faith. Because there is a sense, and I have no relationship with the developer or property owner, I don't know all the economics that go into what motivates or is the deciding factor in moving forward with the project or not moving forward with the project. But Martin Tower, as we've known for predating my time on council, it's just such a unique tract of land because of all that acreage that we have over there. Its current zoning is the only zone of its type here in the city. It was referenced earlier, sort of what their tax liabilities have been. It's been referenced earlier what some of their RCAP awards have been over the years, and in a city where I know Director Collins had mentioned sort of what is developable land is at a premium. It feels like Martin Tower, to a degree, is a water well in a desert. I mean, it's unique that it is that 50-ish acres right there. So as conversations continue to come up about what happened years ago, which was alluded to, and asked about 1,700 units, which I believe, going by census information, is about the size of Freemansburg Borough. So it's kind of like there has to be an acknowledgement that it wasn't just a, something that there wouldn't potentially be pushback from West Bethlehem, but at the same time, there is a need for different levels of housing and things like that. So obviously that conversation happened years ago. I agree with Mr. Callahan about wanting to see something happen, but like anything, there's kind of the superficial conversations, and then the devil's always in the details as we talk about, well, what is it that happens, what the needs are, realistically, what is the timeline, even if the private sector in terms of the property owner and the city came to some sort of agreement of what worked for both parties, even then that's going to take, that's not a light switch that we just flicked and then all of a sudden these buildings and dwellings go on. And in the meantime, there are other projects, as we're talked about, that are in progress and hopefully going online soon. So I will just reiterate, and again, Mr. Callahan, in case you missed it, just echoing your support of something happening at Martin Tower. But I was just recognizing that the devil's always in the details, and in terms of what the economics look like for the property owner versus what is something that the city, whether it be the administration or council, have an appetite for. That's where, if we want to speak at superficially about, well, we want more affordable housing, I think everyone in this room, not speak for everybody, would agree, yes, there's a need for affordable housing. It always comes down to, what does that look like? What are we willing to give up? What are we willing to take? What is the other party interested and invested in this look like? And I was just sharing that. I hope any conversations to that matter happen in good faith, and that if there is a good faith shared vision to reach a common goal for the better of Bethlehem, then that any conversations are inspired by those shared goals. So that's all I have to say on that. Mr. Callahan?
No, I totally agree with you. I had a chance to look up the letter a few minutes ago while we're talking about it. I think what he had said to the council at that time was based on the 1,700 units that he wanted. That they wanted to build, and since then they've decided not to do that. So obviously the number would be smaller. But at that time, Ms. Quiatek is correct. They offered, I think, 8 million, either 7 or 8 million, when I just read in the letter. That was going to be as each. Because it's multiple buildings, and it would be multiple housing buildings. As each one got done, the total would have been $8 million that they were going to give to the city. As each one got done, or if the city chose to take like a $4 million or $5 million lump sum at the beginning before the construction even began. That's basically what I got out of the letter. I wasn't privy to the. I was in the meetings. I think Mr. Herrick had meetings with everybody on council at that time. And I didn't get a hold of the letter until probably about a week and a half ago. So when I read it, to me, I don't, the land either sits there and does nothing, and no added appreciation to the value of the property. There's no tax money coming in. It sits there. It's already paid for. It's only going to increase in value by it sitting there. It's not going to go down in value. Or we try to work out a deal with them.
Mr. Kelly, I wasn't trying to inspire you to repeat your points from earlier.
No, I'm just trying to figure out how we can get the most amount of money and land possibly to move this along, so we're not talking the same thing every day. So thank you.
Understood. So any other new business from members of council? We'll move on. Thank you, everybody. Communications, Ms. Miller, 6A.
The September 9th, 2025 Memorandum and Proposed Resolution from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. Mr. Alcall seeks authorization to execute an agreement with Grace Industries Incorporated BAF to address erosion and hillside washout near the outfall on Monocacy Street. The cost is $205,427.22, and completion is expected by December 31st, 2026. There are no renewals. 8 bids were received. Grace Industries was the lowest responsible bidder.
And Resolution 10A is on the agenda tonight. 6B.
The September 5th, 2025 memorandum with an attached exhibit listing equipment for sale from Sandra Steidel, Director of Procurement. Listed items will be offered for sale in an online auction within 60 days in accordance with provisions of Resolution 2009-95.
If council has no objections to the property listed, the items may be added to the online auction. If council would like to discuss a specific item, the same shall be removed from the list, and we will discuss that at our next council meeting, which is October 7th. Would any member of council like to remove any item from the list and discuss it at the next meeting? I don't see any, so it will be communicated to the purchasing director that council has no objections to the property listed. 6C.
The September 9th, 2025 memorandum from Council President Michael Colon. Mr. Colon recommends review of the city's Article 112 campaign finance report. He believes that certain processes are duplicative because they are carried out by the county level. Mr. Colon recommends that Council's Committee of the Whole review this article at an upcoming meeting for potential amendment.
And now I'm going to refer this to Committee of the Whole, as we've done for previous sort of ethics and similar ordinances. So I'll continue to work with Mr. Miller and the rest of Council to get a Committee of the Whole meeting on the schedule to discuss. 6D.
September 8th, 2025 memorandum from Business Administrator Eric Evans. Mr. Evans advises that the year 2026 will have the unusual circumstance of having 27 pay periods for city employees rather than 26. Mr. Evans explains how funds to cover this extra pay period have been escrowed over the past 9 years to avoid a financial shortfall.
And this memorandum is for information only. 6E.
The September 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Lori Giglio, Grants Administrator for Community and Economic Development. Giglio seeks authorization to apply for a grant in the amount of $800,000 for the Monroe County Local Share Account through the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development. If awarded, the money would be used for capital improvements to the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter.
And Resolution 10B is on the agenda tonight. 6F.
The September 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Lori Giglio, Grants Administrator for Community and Economic Development. Giglio seeks authorization to apply for a grant in the amount of $800,000 for the Northampton and Lehigh County Local Share Account through the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development. If awarded, the money would be used for capital improvements to the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter.
And Resolution 10C will be on the agenda, plus 6G.
The September 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Lori Giglio, Grants Administrator for DCED. Ms. Giglio seeks authorization to apply for a grant in the amount of $400,000 for the Lehigh and Northampton County Local Share Account through the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development. If awarded, the money would be used for construction on West Broad Street.
And that's listed as Resolution 10D, 6H.
The September 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Lori Giglio, Grants Administrator for DCD. Ms. Giglio seeks authorization to apply for a grant in the amount of $2 million for the Redevelopment Assistance Capital Program grant to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. If awarded, the money would be used for capital improvements to the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter.
Resolution 10 is on tonight's agenda. 6I.
The September 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Lori Giglio, Grants Administrator for DCED. Ms. Giglio seeks authorization to apply for a grant in the amount of $5 million for the Redevelopment Assistance Capital Program grant through the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. If awarded, the money would be used toward the Southside Community Center.
Resolution 10F is on the agenda. 6J.
The September 5th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. Mr. Alcall seeks authorization concerning a proposed change order to a contract with Grace Industries Incorporated of Bath for additions to the Friendship Park Improvements Project. Additional work is recommended that would amend the original contract price of $965,952.73 to $1,177,261.23. For an increase of $211,308.50. Term of the contract is December 31st of 2025.
And Resolution 10G is on the agenda. 6K.
The September 9th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. Mr. Alcall seeks authorization to execute an agreement with Five Rivers Fabrication Incorporated Wind Gap to design and construct a sign containing the words City of Bethlehem to be located on the property of 770 Hellertown Road. The cost is $20,000 and the work is to be completed by July 1st of 2026.
Resolution 10H is on the agenda. 6L.
The September 8th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. Mr. Alcall seeks authorization to execute an agreement with Herbert, Rowland, and Grubick Incorporated of Allentown to provide design services for the Greenway Trail Phase 7 improvements, which will provide a paved connection from the previously completed improvements at Auburn Street to the Sauk and Rail Trail near Bachman Street. Cost is $105,170, and completion is expected by December 31st of 2026. There are no renewals. Two bids were received, with the successful bidder being the lower of the two.
And resolution 10-9 is on the agenda. Reports. I don't have anything new to report this evening. Mr. Evans?
Just one item. The administration presented our five-year capital plan. We did the Planning Commission last Thursday, as we do each September. It did receive unanimous support, which we were very pleased with. And I believe the Committee of the Whole is set. Do we confirm that yet with the City Council to review the plan?
October 21st is the tentative.
October 21st, we're working on it.
Okay. Tuesday, October 21st, 6
at
6 o'clock.
P.m. Yeah.
6 o'clock.
Okay. We would also announce that at the next council meeting.
Okay. And we would just like to put the invite out now that it's just a little over a month now, but if anyone on council would like to meet with members of the administration to review the plan, there's a lot to it, much as there is with the budget. We always like to invite you to come in. We, of course, will be talking about it in public in this room plenty over the next month or two, but if you'd like to meet prior to that, we'd be happy to meet with any member of council. Please reach out to us, and I'll follow up with the email as well.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. For our committee chair, Councilwoman Ramsey Smith.
Thank you. The Finance Committee met early this evening at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. There were three agenda items reviewed. The first was a proposed budget transfer to fund the World Heritage Site Coordinator position. The second was a proposed budget transfer to use money from two grants to support the Women's Health Services and Immunization Outreach. The final item was a memo from Business Administrator Eric Evans concerning the 2026 payroll matter. Mr. Evans' memo was for informational purposes only. The outcome of the budget adjustments resulting in the first two agenda items being placed on tonight's agenda. Grace Cramsey Smith, Chairwoman, Finance Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. We do not have any ordinances for final passes, so we'll move on to new ordinances. Mr. Miller, 9A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2025. Bill number 42, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Councilwoman Cranston-Smith.
Go ahead.
Well, Councilwoman, I'll start with you if you have questions. Councilwoman Cranston-Smith.
Oh, okay. We're on 9A, the World Heritage, right?
Yes.
Okay. I know we discussed this at length in the Finance Committee meeting, and this is basically, for people that don't know, transferring $150,000 from the Downtown Initiative Fund, funds that were earmarked for Downtown Initiative but not used for 3 years, so that it could go toward the new World Heritage Site Coordinator position that will be housed at Moravian University. And the only questions I didn't ask is, Mr. Evans, so if we transfer this $150,000 from the Downtown Initiative, what would be the balance in that fund at that?
The fund started with $50,000 at the beginning of the year. This will move it to $170,000.
Okay. But my question is, if we transfer $150,000 to this site coordinator position, then the balance would be $20,000. Is that correct? I wanted to know what the balance with the fund would. The balance of the Downtown Initiative Fund will be what after, if we transfer this money to Moravian University for the salary?
Well, the account right now this year started with $50,000 total. So this request is to move $120,000 into it to increase it to $170,000.
Right.
Yeah, $170,000. From that amount, $150,000 would go to Moravian. $10,000 has been expended to date, so we have a balance of around $10,000.
Okay, so it would be $10,000. Okay, thank you.
For 2025, correct?
Yes. And as we said in the meeting, the city intends that this will not be a once and done funding. That where will we get the funding in 2 years if we continue to look to fund this position? Have we thought about that yet? For the site coordinator to give it to Moravian University?
No, it's still a very much a rolling conversation as we talked at 6 o'clock as this initiative has rolled down the path and blossomed, and now we've received that designation. The next step is to develop that 501, the nonprofit organization, with the goal in mind for it to become self-sustaining. I think, you know, Steph and Jella very nicely rolled through the entire plan on what the goal is of this new site manager and what she will be doing in the next 2 years. So I think it's a discussion for a year from now or 2 years from now, not so much tonight at this point for this particular question.
The reason I ask is because I did ask, and Mrs. Jello was great in responding to all my questions previous. So I asked her both via email and then tonight also, is this a once and done funding that we're going to be giving? And the answer, both in the email and tonight, my understanding was no, that we will be looking to continue to fund this position in the future. So that's why I'm asking, do we have any idea where we will get the funding from to, if we're going to look to continue the funding position?
Yeah, no,
we don't know.
That's a 2028 budget question you're asking. Yeah, I don't have an answer for
that. All right, thank you. That's all.
Something we'll certainly develop, sure.
Okay, thank you.
Councilwoman Laird?
I just wanted to state that I will be recusing from discussion and vote on this item because I am employed by Moravian University and also am directly involved in project work relating to this World Heritage work at Moravian. So.
Understood. Thank you, Councilman. Any other discussion? Mr. Callahan?
Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Callahan, you speak first.
Yeah, I totally support Moravian College or Moravian University, but I'm going to be voting no on it just for the fact that we have downtown businesses that are, all the ones that I've talked to, they're down 20-25% on revenue for the year, and a lot of them are really struggling right now, and I just think that that money that we've had there should have been used to help the businesses out, especially to get through this time with the parking garage. I tried to explain to them, you know, the parking garage is coming on board, but a lot of them don't think it's just the parking garage. So I think that money would have been better used to help out. I don't know if it's advertising or promoting the downtown business area a little bit more, but I don't want to get in the habit of handing $150,000 this year and $150,000 next year to a private university that has a $142 million endowment. I think they can afford $150,000 out of the endowment to, you know, fund this. It's primarily their properties, anyways, that are in this World Heritage site, and I think there's going to be some revenue, financial gains that are going to come in with the tourism that's coming in from the World Heritage site. So because of that, I'll be voting no on it. I don't know. I was hoping that the mayor would be here, but because I did want to ask him, but I know that he is a Moravian graduate alumni, and I thought, if I'm wrong, I apologize, I thought that he was also on the board of Moravian, so I just thought it wouldn't look good.
Any other discussion from members of council? Councilwoman?
I have a lot of concerns, and I just want to be really clear. I mean, I know this vote's going to be futile because I know it's probably going to pass, but I 100% support the World Heritage Designation site. In fact, I was one that voted no against decreasing the spots in the New Orleans Street Garage, specifically because I said I think they're going to be needed because I felt we were going to get this designation, and thank goodness we did. But I just I have concerns about transferring $150,000 from the downtown initiative to pay for the salary of the site coordinator position. Because first of all, I know for a fact Moravian University already pledged that they would pay for the salary of this position into perpetuity. So then why are we using taxpayer money to pay for this? I don't understand that. Secondly, the city says, you know, this is not a once and done payment. So we're going to be looking for every 2 to 3 years to fund this position. And we don't even know where the funding's coming from. And again, we go back to a private entity has agreed to pay for this forever. So why are we going to take taxpayer money then to pay for it? Doesn't make sense. And third and most importantly, the Downtown Initiative Fund is meant to provide funds for needed resources and repairs for both downtown areas, the north and south side. And I know for a fact that downtown merchants on both sides have approached me multiple times, as well as other council members in the city, requesting funds in recent years for what they believe to be necessary repairs and resources. So I don't know how we could purposely not spend money on the Downtown Initiative budget for 3 years so we could save that money to transfer it to a salary for a position that a private entity already pledged to pay for. And we're looking at ongoing, you know, funding expenditures. I walk both downtowns a lot, and I have a lot of concerns, and people even, you know, people from out of town and residents have concerns about the condition, especially the broken sidewalks and the missing bricks. I brought this up before, and I know for a fact personally how one fall can really adversely affect one's life, and that's why I'm really sensitive to people falling, and I think we need to do everything to avoid falls, especially since we are a tourism city and now a World Heritage designation. I think it's vital that we earmark the funds for the downtowns, because that's the purpose of the account, and not transfer for salary, again, already pledged to be covered by a private entity. Assuring our downtowns are safe and looking good is directly correlated to the success of tourism in general, as well as tourism within our World Heritage sites. And again, I may be attacked for this vote or for everything I'm saying, but I have to say, the bottom line is my role is to assure the taxpayer funds are utilized most efficiently, as well as to advocate for our small business owners. And in doing that, there's no way I can justifiably vote for this budget transfer. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Fleeta.
Thanks. First of all, I have a question, a clarification. The position that Moravian University committed to funding in perpetuity is the site manager position, is that correct?
Yes, that's
and
correct.
And this funding is for the site coordinator position.
No, this funding
no?
is for the site manager.
If you don't mind coming to a microphone to answer questions,
thanks.
Please.
So can you explain, like, if they have made that commitment, then why are we doing this?
So first of all, I'm not sure where the misunderstanding became, but it is for funding for the site manager position at Moravian University.
No, you were right.
Okay. So they have offered to host the position, and to, you know, keep that position in perpetuity. Along with that responsibility are a lot of other overarching expenses. So we felt that it would be possible for us to help fund the position for now as we begin the process of building the site, both our structural and financial organization. It would free up some funding for additional support that would be needed in terms of that support staff possibly providing monitoring and reporting to UNESCO, and also just building up the site as well.
So when you say hosting, that means they're paying for the insurance and
yes.
the retirement and all of that, and then office space, equipment, and all of that.
Yes.
And then you point out that, of course, a site manager also needs, you know, maybe office help. And so there would be potentially staff people at Moravian who some of their time might be connected to doing work on behalf of this project.
Yes, and they have been supporting this in many ways through many different positions at the university. We heavily rely on their communications and marketing department to handle a lot of our public affairs, which there's been a lot of expenses with that. They host the website and have all that technical support. There's a lot of technical support that they provide. A lot of the work that they do, it simply would not be feasible for us. So I've seen this for us as a city to try and support some of these positions.
Do we have a sense of what their what that in-kind cost share,
yes.
What the value of that has been over the course of the last
yes.
Year or so?
The approximate value of all the services that they have provided so far is $530,000. Actually, $531,000.
Over what period of time?
Over, I'd say, about the past 2 years.
Okay. Yeah, because a lot of this happened once the inscription thing actually happened. Then it was like, oh, we need a really great website, and we need a, yeah. And so Mr.
Yes.
Larimer's time and as an
yes.
employee of Moravian University has been going towards that. And one of the things we talked about in the finance committee was, yes, like, we're going to have to revisit this in a couple of years and see where we are. And at the same time, that this gives a glide path for the new site manager to get in there, create potentially a 501c3, where they can then do the fundraising that would build sustainability for the organization itself. So right now, what we've got is we've got this incredible honor and amazing thing that's come to our city. We have multiple site owners. We have a city and a decent-sized university, as well as a nonprofit that, you know, manages historic sites and things like that. And a couple of others, I guess. There's like a whole lot of partners.
Yes.
And so we're like really at the very beginning of all of this. And we have talked so many times in this chamber about what this is going to mean to our city. And of course, what that means to the businesses that are on our main street and on our Broad Street and Gooder and Walnut and all of that. It seems to me that there are a lot of different definitions of what an investment is in our city and in our businesses and things like that. But we have talked repeatedly about the impact of this incredible honor will bring to heritage tourism and all of that. And as Ms. Collins had mentioned, there are a lot of other pockets of money and grants and things like that that are going into things. Yes, I mean, we all know, we're all feeling the pressure of this economy, and I have no doubt that our Main Street businesses and our other downtown businesses on the south side as well are feeling the pinch. However, you know, if my sidewalk is cracked and, someone's going to trip on it, I as a homeowner have to pay for that. So I don't understand why we keep talking about how we should be spending the city's money on repairing sidewalks that are the responsibility of property owners. And so I don't own million-dollar plus property on Main Street. You know, I'm just a regular homeowner on the west side in a little three-bedroom house. So I don't find that a particularly compelling argument in terms of this. I guess what I'm saying is the bottom line is for me that now that we have this designation, this is not the time for us to disinvest in this process. And it's actually the time for us to recommit to the process, which is going to have so many benefits for the city and for our business owners. And so for those reasons, I'll be voting yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion, Councilwoman Leo?
I have a question. Was Meridian ever asked if they could use their endowment? Like, I know that there's endowment restrictions, intent and all that stuff usually comes with board approval, but was the question ever posed to them if they would be willing to use their endowment?
I'm not sure. Okay. It's not something that's come up in our World Heritage Council meetings. Okay. And if it's proper to state, I just want to say Meridian University owns two of the properties. There are 10, so they do not own a majority of the locations. And I also just want to say that the plan is to reevaluate in 2 years. Obviously, our site manager, we're hoping, is going to start the process of generating revenue and fundraising so that it can be self-sustaining in the future. This is a big step for us right now to get this off the ground. And Meridian has also promised their grant writing department to help assist with that. And they'll be announcing some grants very shortly that are already coming into play to help. And I don't know if it's proper at the moment to say this or not, but I just also want to state that my husband and I own a business in Bethlehem, and we are experiencing some challenging times as well, and do not expect the city to pay for our sidewalks.
When it comes to the property ownership, you said Moravian owns two. Who owns the bulk of the property?
So the city owns the Colonial Industrial Quarter. Mm-hmm. There are three property owners. The city, which owns obviously the Colonial Industrial Quarter, which is leased by HVMS. Moravian University owns two properties. And then Bethlehem Area Moravians own the church, the sister's house, the combined house.
Okay.
And God's Acre.
Okay.
And we own the buildings, obviously, and the ruins in the Colonial Industrial Quarter.
The area that's most heavily utilized because of the presence of all arts clubs activities in
yes.
that area, so the area that's going to need the most repair over time.
Yes.
I will say, I support this. I've been quite frank about the fact that, like, I like that we're getting the UNESCO World Heritage designation. I think that's a good thing for the city, but I've always said that I didn't think that we would realize an economic impact right away. People that are in Bethlehem for all the other 1,000 vessels that we have are going to go down there. And it's my hope that it would grow to become a more economic incentive over time. So I just see this initial, hopefully, one-time money to Moravian as any type of other initial startup cost. Like, when you're starting something up, you got to push a little bit. And my support for this relied heavily on the fact that the grant writing services were something that Moravian was going to help out with. And if we can get grants through that, like, we can't bog down the city with an additional grant writing, like, request for the industrial quarter or anything else UNESCO World Heritage related. We should be lessening the burden on the city when it comes to UNESCO World Heritage. So my support for this is under the assumption that it is a one-time push startup thing. But even if it is a one or two time, hopefully not more than that, this is the conversation that we did have about at least a year ago, where I said, economically, we're going to end up paying something. And everybody said, we're all cool with it. And I'm not saying everybody on this council, I'm just saying all the conversations that were had in this room, it was like there was an understanding of the economic cost at the beginning. So that's why I'm supportive of it. I don't think that we should pay for it in perpetuity. So I'm hopeful that the grant writing will be very helpful to support a 501c3 and create a fund that could sustain something. So thank you.
I can also state that they're working with grad students to develop some exciting new ways to promote tours and to entice people to visit the downtown and visit the site. So I'm really excited, and I hope that she gets to, or we get to present that in the future to all of you.
Sorry, last question. So you said us and the church and Moravian, mainly us, but the three of us own properties. Did we ask the church at all to contribute anything to the?
So it's the city, it's Moravian University, and Bethlehem area Moravians owns the church. So the church, Pastor Rice and the church, they have a whole World Heritage Committee that have been giving us in-kind services. They do tours of the church and of the sanctuary. They pretty much funded a lot of the celebration, and they have contributed many services, what they can, you know, physically do. They're also in the process now of raising money for a new roof, so they have their own expenses that they have to, you know, incur and take care of. But they are a great partner and volunteer. Their volunteers are just amazing, so they are always present for any event and sit on all of our committees as well.
Okay, so in-kind contributions from our partners that are not sitting on endowments, but the partner that is sitting on an endowment, services to the tune of almost $500,000 that you said. Thanks for that number, I didn't realize that. And then our initial push is what's going to get UNESCO really off of the ground.
And then we reevaluate in the future.
Right. Thank you.
Sure.
Any other discussion from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
Has there been any discussion on tickets, selling tickets or fees for admittance or anything like that, you know, to generate revenue?
So we currently offer a tour every Saturday at 2:00, and the cost of the tour is $25. Historic Bethlehem keeps all the revenue from those tours. HBMS, I'm sorry.
And so if people are coming here for the World Heritage, are they going to have to pay something besides that $25 fee to tour the World Heritage sites?
Not at that time. They just pay the fee for the tour. It's about a 60 to 90 minute tour.
And the profits goes to the historical board?
Historic Bethlehem Museums and Sites keeps the profits right now. So they provide the docents. At this point in time, as we, again, are currently working on the entire World Heritage Council, you know, what that operational structure would look like moving forward.
Is there any possibility that the three owners of the buildings could split the $150,000 fee, not just the city?
So Moravian University will already be contributing towards the site manager position in other ways, as I mentioned, like insurance, and this will not cover her entire salary. And Bethlehem Aaron Moravians, they spend about $120,000 a year keeping up their buildings that are part of the site, just part of the site, and maintaining the grounds. So they will, and they have will have promised that in perpetuity as well. Bethlehem Aaron Moravians also sponsored our World Heritage Celebration, sponsored about $5,000, and I would say just in the past few months, probably close to another $5,000 in marketing. So everybody's trying to pick up here and there to contribute, because we don't right now have a, we're not generating revenue.
Right, so the university's gonna be picking up the healthcare and the...
About half of the salary as well.
Half the salary.
At least.
What's the salary?
I believe the salary is, she's considered a, the site manager's considered a vice president for World Heritage, which includes studies and also the site. So I believe, let's say it is $170,000, I believe. So she has, she's considered vice president for World Heritage. And I really need to check on that. But
is that 170, is that including the monies for the her insurance?
I'm not positive about that. I don't believe so. Let me just make sure. See, I might have that. See if I have that.
I didn't know that Raven was trying to contribute so much.
$175,000 a year.
Is her base salary?
It's her base salary.
And then on top of that, Raven's paying the benefits and what else?
Any other benefits that come along with that besides health insurance.
Where's the other $25,000 coming from? We're giving her 150, but...
Well, so we're giving 150 over 2 years. So we're giving approximately, I mean, that would be a one-time payment. So we're contributing $75,000 towards her salary this year and $75,000 next year, if you want to think of it that way.
Okay.
So Moravian is picking up the rest of it, and including support staff that will be doing monitoring and data reporting for UNESCO.
I did not know that, so I apologize. I will be supporting it then, because I didn't know that Raven was helping out. And I thought it was $150,000 this year, and then $150,000 next year. So you're saying it's $150,000 total over a year period, and Raven's helping to support some of the fees.
Yes.
That's
$100,000 a year before all the benefits package.
That sounds a little fair to me, so thank you.
Okay.
Any other discussion?
I have more questions I thought of. Do we have an idea how much the city has put toward the World Heritage Site thus far, how much we put toward?
So in 2018 and in 2020, we contributed $25,000 towards the work that Shirlene Duchess Mowers was doing with HVMS for the nomination and dossier. Besides that, we have made some very, I have an annual, which just started, I believe, this past year, $2,000 budget from the city for $2,000 for expenses that come up. Some of that's used towards marketing, some of that's used towards just to some of the things we need to try and promote our site.
And then we also, I think I saw we also paid like $60,000 in the last 3 years from the downtown initiative already toward it, didn't we?
The 50 is what Steph was referring to.
Okay.
Yeah, that
I
was
saw in the
same
middle
thing.
Of 60, like 25 for 3 years. And then also part of your salary for it is coming, or all of it's coming from the city for the World Heritage. You're the coordinator position.
Yes.
Okay, so that. And did Moravian ask for the contribution of $150,000?
No, they did not ask for that. As I mentioned on, I think it was January 30th, we had a meeting where we asked for our partners what they would be able and willing as we set up a new site or set up a site operation, so what they would be willing to contribute and what each partner would be able to contribute, whether it was in-kind services or some sort of monetary value. And they offered to host that position. And in the conversation of the meeting, we had said that as a city, we hoped to be able to support that in some way until the site gets off the ground.
Okay. So they didn't ask for it, and they agreed to pay for the total amount of the position, it sounds like, correct? The total amount, okay. So I guess I'm wondering, like, whose idea was it then to give a donation or contribution toward it? Was it the mayor or the committee?
It was a combination of both, because as we mentioned, we're asking what each partner would be able to consider a fair share contribution. So I did ask, is there something we can do in support of the site? And really, it's the model that we used, as I mentioned before, is we supported Sharpie, not just Mallers, in the dossier. This is already something the city has done in support of our designation. So the most likely path seemed to also support the current work of the site through a position until we can get off the ground. So I asked Mr. Edwards if this was something that we could do, considering we used the Downtown Initiative Theater before to support that. This site kind of used that model.
Okay, thank you. Great. All right, that helps clarify. I still have concerns, like I said, because if they agreed to pay for the total position, and again, it's taxpayer money that's, you know, my mind earmarked for the downtown initiatives, and there's so many things. I know, you know, the sidewalks was just one thing that I brought it up because I have concerns about people falling, especially, you know, for God forbid they get fallen, they got hurt, but it's not going to be good for our tourism or the city. And I know the businesses brought up, like, they just have so many more regulations in the historic district that they have to go by for the sidewalks, and it makes it more expensive, and they have more foot traffic than a residential homeowner. You know, again, I'm thinking of the businesses, they went through COVID, that was a big hit. They also have, you know, the garage was down the last year and a half, so they've said they have less businesses. So, you know, that's why, I'm going to be voting no, because I feel like that money is earmarked for the downtown initiative and small businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion before we call the roll? Thank you. Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Ms. Kubitschek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Recused.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Nay.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 5-1 with one recusal. 9B.
The ordinance of the City of Bethlehem and Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2025. Bill number 43, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Kubitschek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Pass 7-0. Continuing on to resolutions, 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Grace Industries Incorporated to address erosion and hillside washout near the outfall on Monocacy Street. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Ms. Kubitschek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Pass 7-0. 10B.
Mr. Colon?
Oh, yep.
And I'd like to make a motion that we consider resolutions 10B through 10F as a group, given that they are all, you know, grant resolutions and similar in nature.
Motion on the floor to group 10B through 10F. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilwoman Wilhelm. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Mr. Miller, please call the roll on grouping 10B through 10F together.
Ms. Kubitschek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Pass 7-0. Mr. Miller, if you could please read 10B through 10F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor is authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for a Monroe County Local Share Account grant through Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development to assist the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter. Be it further resolved that the Mayor and Controller are authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as deemed appropriate and necessary and or related thereto. 10C. Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor is authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for a Lehigh and Northampton County Local Share Account Grant through the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development to assist the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter. Be it further resolved that the mayor and controller are authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as are deemed to be necessary and or related thereto. 10D, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor is authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for a Lehigh and Northampton County Local Share Account Grant through the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development to assist with the construction of West Broad Street. Be it further resolved that the mayor and controller are authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as are deemed to be necessary and or related thereto. 10E, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor is authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for Redevelopment Assistance Capital Program Grant through the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to assist the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter. Be it further resolved that the mayor is authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as are deemed to be necessary and or related thereto. And 10F, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor is authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for Redevelopment Assistance Capital Program Grant through the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to assist the Southside Community Center. Be it further resolved that the mayor is authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as are deemed to be necessary and or related thereto. These resolutions are sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion on the group. Councilwoman?
Was that me?
Quijet.
Sorry, thank you. There's another councilwoman right there, and sometimes I don't know if you're recognizing me. Sure, I just wanted to say that there's $3.6 million in requests for the Bethlehem Emergency Sheltering among those resolutions, and I'm wishing the city the applications all the best, all the fingers crossed that those are successful, as well as the $5 million for the community center and the money for the West Broad Street, but especially being aggressive and going after those funds, since we know that to turn the shelter into a non-congregate shelter with, you know, all the facilities that it needs is such an expensive undertaking. So best of luck.
Thank you. Any other discussion? I just have one quick question, Ms. Collins or whomever, but what's the anticipated timeline of when awards are determined? When would we know? Or whether it's the LSAs or the RCAP money?
So the LSA is a little bit more regular. So for this, there's two different LSA buckets, but the ones that we're applying for here are the county funds. And so usually we will hear about those nine-ish months.
Okay.
RCAP is much more variable and very politically dependent. So that one is more up in here. Usually and budget dependent.
Well, hopefully that's budget. Thank you, Ms. Collins. I didn't have any other questions. Anything else from members of council before we call the roll? Mr. Miller?
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Pass 7-0. 10G.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute an amendment to an agreement with Grace Industries Incorporated to provide additional materials and labor for the Friendship Park Improvements Project. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Pass 7-0. 10H.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Five Rivers Fabrication Incorporated to design, construct, and install a metal sign. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion. Councilwoman
Wilhelm. A quick question. I'm not actually sure if there's anybody here to answer it. I was curious to know, or just to clarify, we selected the fabricator, the artist, but not the design.
Yeah, there was a design concept associated with the selection.
Okay, so in just reading through the memo, that there is a committee, including the Fine Arts Commission, who will approve the design throughout this process as well. So the design itself, in theory, was presented and selected.
Yes.
And then what will the process of design approval look like between now and completion?
So there were recent conversations, and I believe most recently they said like a 2D rendering would be sufficient for the Fine Arts Commission to do like its final review, and they'd sign off on that, and then they would be ready to go and actually, you know, build the art.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know.
Sure.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Any other discussion? Call the roll, Ms. Miller.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Palum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 10-aye.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller, and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute agreement with Herbert, Roland, and Grubick Incorporated to provide design services for the Greenway Trail Phase 7 improvement. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passed 7-0. 10-J.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature of Bethlehem Resolution is hereby granted for 441 High Street to replace existing roof shingles on the rear portion of the roof. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. That's 7-0. And finally, 10-K.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature of Bethlehem Resolution is hereby granted for 36 East Wall Street to remove the slate roofing that fronts on Wall Street and replace it with GAF slate line shingles in the antique slate color. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. That concludes tonight's agenda. I'll remind everyone there are 5 Tuesdays in September, so enjoy the extra week, the week off. Get home safely, everyone. This meeting is adjourned.
In the defense.